Late Night with Catherine Boyle on Talk Radio.
This is the Late Night Alternative. I'm Catherine Boyle. The phone number stays the same. It's 0344 499 1000. Ian's taken a week off, so I'm in charge. I mean, I'm supposed to be in charge for the rest of the time, but don't tell him that. So if you want to give me a shout, you can do. We can talk about that stuff. We can talk about this stuff. I've got, daft stories to tell you about. If you don't want to discuss what's already been discussed endlessly by everybody, and what difference does it make? I mean, what difference does it make? 0344 499 1000 is the number. I mean, I've got Chris on the line. Let's see what Chris wants. Hi, Chris.
Oh, hi, Kev. I just want to say good luck. I'm sure you won't need it. Is this the first time you've done a solo at all, or is it you've done it before?
No, I've done it a fair bit before, and I used to present my own shows in the past. So, you know, it starts out a little rusty every time, but I soon get the hang of it.
Yes. How do you think yesterday went, the live event? I enjoyed it myself. It was very good.
All right, cool. Yeah, Chris is Chris is talking about the, we had a Zoom show. You know, we normally do this sort of rabbit hole thing where we go to small venues up and down the country. The idea being to get us out of London, even though neither of us live in London. And obviously we can't do that at the moment because of the lockdown rules that most of us are following. And so we decided to do something on Zoom, a socially distant Zoom party, and I think it went really well. And do you know what I think the main reason was? Is because there were kids watching. And so it gave us little parameters that we don't normally have. And we loved it. And I think the people that dialed in liked it too.
That's right.
Funny. Have you been to any of our rabbit hole lives?
I haven't, unfortunately. No, I used to listen to LBC show, of course, and years ago that Ian used to do, but I just got back. Because they're shutting or locking or whatever it's called, I've only got back to the radios. It just caught up with you recently, really.
Oh, that's so cool.
It's a great double act. I think you both complement each other so well.
Thanks very much. Thank you very much. I really appreciate that. Hey, so how's your day been, Chris? Tell me about it.
Oh, well, I haven't been doing a lot. I went out for a couple of walks, but, you know, I only got locked down by a bike on the pavement. You know, usual thing, but, you know.
Comes to something when that's the most exciting thing that happens all day, right? Right?
It was today, yeah. Well, you know, it's lucky in that, you know, because you can't see your friend go for a drink like you used to, can you? You know?
No.
It's all a bit bizarre, right? You know, we're all going through it, of course. We're all here together, as Boris keeps telling us.
Some more than others, yeah, but I get what you mean.
Exactly, yes, exactly. But things keeps it almost sane. Well, not quite, but almost sane anyway. But I did ring up, I think on Friday, actually, when Ian did that Scott Walker song, and, you know, I thought that's Walker Brothers, he did that song brilliantly.
Yeah. He's a bit of a singer on, I was going to say on the quiet, but it's not quiet, is it? Let's be honest.
Yes, because he did that, well, like I mentioned, Scott Walker, he invented one of his songs. I thought it's brilliantly done, you know. And, hidden talents, I'm sure both of you have got.
Really well hidden.
I like your friend Jackson, just for sure, anyway, you know.
Well, thanks very much.
Oh, you lived there for a while, didn't you? So,
I did. I studied French. I studied French and Spanish at university, and this is where it got me. Ladies and gents.
Yeah, perfect. So, you think you're from Paris, you know, I've been there very often, but that's brilliant. Yeah. Hey, I'm looking forward to this week anyway. This is for you anyway.
Well, thanks very much. I really appreciate your call. You take care of yourself. I'll speak to you another time.
You as well. Thank you very much.
See ya. 0344 499 1000. Thanks to Chris for being the first one in. If you want to give me a shout, you've got 2 and a bit hours to do so. We can talk about whatever you fancy. Have you been anywhere nice lately? Any mini breaks? Stroke reasonable reasons to go quite a long way. I saw my mum today because this whole thing, and I don't think it's necessarily just this, the Cummings thing, although I don't know, the air of frustration seems to have amplified about tenfold today. It's just, it got to me today, and I'm not blaming him. It just got to me today, and I thought, oh, I really want to see my mum. I haven't given her a hug for 2 months, obviously. She lives within walking distance of my house. In fact, if I stand at the top of my landing, I can see the window at the top of her landing, to the point where at 8 o'clock every night, me and my kids stand at the top of the landing with torches and we flash each other to say goodnight. And it's just something that's become a little bit of a routine. And I think a lot of us have developed sort of little markers for the day, because otherwise the days seem to one rolls into the next. And I find it very difficult sometimes to work out whether it's the weekend yet and all that sort of stuff. You know, thank goodness I've been able to carry on working through it. And I know not everyone's had that luxury, but at least it's something that means I've got to be in a certain place at a certain time. Because otherwise, I'll be honest with you, I probably wouldn't get changed out of my pyjamas most of the time. So, I felt like I wanted to see my mum. I would ideally like to give her a cuddle, but for obvious reasons, I'm not doing that. Well, for some reasons that are more obvious to others, because it would appear that there's more flexibility than we realised for some of these rules. But my mum has been shielding, so she went into lockdown before the actual formal lockdown. And she's taken it to the extent where she doesn't even go out for the walk you know, and we kind of live in a semi-rural area where there aren't that many people about. It's not like she's going to go out of her front door and immediately she's on a high street and she's sort of slaloming down the street to try and avoid people. She's not been out. And she's a very sociable person. And to the point where when I go round there and tap on her window and stand well back and we have a conversation through the window, you can tell that she's kind of clawing at the walls to try and have someone else to talk to. Not that she doesn't love my dad, but, you know, one person for that amount of time, she likes her gab, my mum. So, you know, she's made sacrifices and they've not been as great as the sacrifices of some other people. You know, not going to hospitals, not seeing loved ones who were dying, not going to funerals, that kind of stuff. Galling, isn't it? That's all I'm going to say, galling. And I don't particularly want to go into the excuses we were, the reasons we were given today, the excuses we were given, some of the questionable decisions that were made, even by his own admission, he said that might be questionable, people might be angry about it. I don't really care about that. What does it mean to you, what's happened today? What does it mean to you? Because I've noticed it's been turned back on the media. I've noticed that news outlets have been accused of whipping this up. What does it mean to you? What's happened today? If you want to talk about that. If you don't want to talk about that, we can talk about other stuff. 0344 499 1000 is the number. I just know that today, I don't know, maybe it just caught me on a bad day and we all have them at the moment because we've got loads of time to think about stuff and no way of running away from it. You know, I can't bury myself in a drive to work or anything like that. What does it mean to you today? 0344 499 1000. We've got one here. Just tuned in for the news and spent 10 minutes listening to whinging. Switched off. You spent 15 minutes listening to whinging. I'm just looking at the time you sent that. But I'm glad you told me you've switched off because it's very important that I know that. 0344 499 1000. You can give me a call. Or we can talk about other stuff. You're more than welcome. You know this show. The way it normally goes is that we open the phone lines and people come on and you can tell me about your day. You can tell me about stuff that's happened. I mean, not a lot's happened, but we can discuss bands. We can discuss the latest film you've seen. I've started watching that thing on and I never thought these words would come out of my mouth. Have you seen The Big Flower Fight? Spell F-L-O-W-E-R. It's with Vic Reeves and Natasha Dimitriou. And they are, it's like the Bake Off, but with great, like, bushes and that. I know, but Vic Reeves can sell me anything. So I've started watching that and I really love the Grace and Perry Art Club. That's my kind of escapism at the moment. And I like that, you know, an hour of kind of comfortable, friendly, jolly, relaxing escapism. 0344 499 1000, and that's what I'm offering you tonight if you fancy it, or we can talk about whatever. So 0344 499 1000. Tell you what, we'll have some adverts while we have some thinking time and then you can ring me up. How about that? Get a cup of tea, do whatever you want. I know you're in your pajamas, don't worry about it, I can't see you. You don't know what I'm wearing. 0344 499 1000. You're listening to The Late Night Alternative.
Late Night with Catherine Boyle on Talk Radio.
0344 499 1000 is the number to call. We've got Alistair, we've got Dave, and then, of course, we could speak to you. It's very much down to you. What happens is you give us a ring, Amy will give you a call straight back, and we have a gab. There's really nothing more to it than that. 0344 499 1000. Let's go to Dave first, then we'll speak to Alistair, if that's all right, Alistair. Hey, Dave, what's going on with you?
Hi, I'm just a bit fed up.
Go on, talk to me.
It's hard. I'm living at home with my mum.
Right.
Sometimes the smallest things can trigger an argument.
Right.
And we've been arguing a couple of times today and I'm really stressed.
All right, talk to me. I mean, you don't have to give me loads of detail, but give me a vague idea of what you were rowing about. Not that it different really matters. Things. I think it's just about being confined, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Different things. Like tonight, it was just... I was waiting for something to come on the telly and she said, I can't remember this James Bond. I said, well, we just watched it the other night and it turned into an argument just over that.
Yeah. I know, and I'm laughing. Please don't think I'm laughing at you. It's just, you know when you're saying it that it's not worth rowing over, and you know that you love her. But it's all day, every day, man. That's got to be tough. Can you go out at all? Can you do your hour's walk by yourself?
I don't. I've got no habit of staying in bed.
Nah. It's just, you know...
Sometimes I don't open your pyjamas and all.
Yeah. You see, I think that might be part of it. And I'm the same. Yeah. I think if I didn't have kids and a reason to get up and shape myself, I would just loll about. But I also recognise that's not probably not best for my head. I went for a walk round the corner to stand outside my mum's window and have a socially distant chat with her today.
And to be honest, half of this day is like going to visit me mate next week.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was going to be honest with you. When I got round there, I started having a conversation with my mum and dad, and my dad's, I don't know, got on my nerves a little bit. But that's great, because it just goes to show that we're different people, we still love each other, but there is a reason why we don't live together anymore. But, yeah, I know. Is there any way you could do the whole go and have a walk in the park and your mate be there?
I haven't got his phone number, he hasn't got mine.
Oh, blimey.
I haven't seen him for about a year.
Right. So how did you communicate before?
I used to just go down his house and that.
Well, would it be possible to go, knock on his door, stand well back and wait for him to answer?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Do it. Do it. Because we all need someone else to talk to now and again.
We do.
And just knocking on his door, you can knock on his door and stand well back and say you're coming for your hour's walk. I don't think that's against the rules. Try it.
I think I will, definitely.
Do it tomorrow and give me a ring tomorrow night and tell me how it goes, all right?
I will. I've just been really stressed tonight.
I know. I know. But you know what? Stopping in's probably not going to make it any better.
It's not.
No, and, you know, you love your mum and... The reason why we, unless there's something else going on, the reason why we row with people that we're very close to is because we know that it's not forever, you know. We're not going to fall out with them forever.
Yeah.
If what you're saying's right and it's just over daft stuff. It's just frustration.
I mean, to be honest, I think this lockdown's far too long.
It is, but I'm willing to stop in for as long as it takes to make sure that I'm not putting other people at risk and, you know, my loved ones aren't at risk. But I know what you mean. I'm fed up of it too. It's boring, isn't it?
Yeah. I heard on the telly today, though, like, apparently some shops could open on June the 15th.
Yeah, but do you feel like going shopping?
Not really. I've been shopping online a lot.
Yeah, I think everyone has. I think everyone has. You know, in America... during some parts of the lockdown, and I don't know whether it's all over America, but I know some people found that certain places would only deliver essential items. I mean, it's a good job they didn't do that here, because we've been ordering all kinds of old crap.
I've been getting loads of DVDs off Amazon.
Yeah, but, you know, arguably that's not crap. That's about survival and staying in and keeping yourself entertained and out of everyone's way, so...
It is.
Listen, Dave, good luck. Have a little chat with your mate tomorrow and let me know. Go on.
Can I mention one more thing?
Yeah, of course you can.
Since I've struggled with my weight all my life.
Yeah.
And since this lockdown, I've started comfort eating a bit.
Well, I think everyone has. I think everyone has. I think... Right, I'm obviously not a doctor or anything like that, but we're all on hold at the moment. When things start to shift, then we can start worrying about it. I used to go to the gym. I mean, not as often as I should have, but, you know, it's all gone by the wayside and I can't sit and worry about it now. I think a lot of people are putting weight on at the moment because there's nothing else to do. But actually, that walk with your mate, you know, that might be quite a nice little routine to get into.
Yeah.
All right. Don't sweat it anyway, Dave. It's nice to hear from you. Thanks for giving me a ring.
See ya.
Take care. No, no. 0344 499 1000. Let's have a word with Alistair. Hey, Alistair.
Good evening, Catherine.
Good evening to you.
Good evening. This is the news. I love it when you do the show alone because it means I can have a longer chat with you.
Well, you say that. No, you can. Of course you can. It is a strange one, isn't it? Because normally, and especially with us being in two different rooms... different places normally being in, and it's more difficult for me to sort of join in with conversations, because I can't look him in the eye and go, right, I've got something to say. You can't judge someone's facial expressions. I can't see when he's got so I sit back and let him do his thing. But yeah, it's nice to speak to you directly, Alistair.
Of course. So I'm patiently waiting for your picture to arrive.
Oh.
So that's something to look forward to.
What happened that? You had a bit of a windfall.
I did, yes.
Good.
Just
good.
I don't know what happened and why I forgot about it, because it was...
Well, you've been a bit busy, haven't you?
It was one of these, what do they call them? When you claim the insurance payments back on your credit card.
All right.
PPE, wasn't it? PPI or PPE, yeah. It's not PPE, is it? It's PPI.
PPE's face masks, but I knew what you meant.
And then apparently they'd sent out a cheque, but it had been returned. And then they eventually got round to contacting me through the DWP. And then they said, oh, we've had this letter, you might want to ring them. So I did, and that was the result.
Hey, that's pretty sweet, isn't it?
So it's good and bad, because I've been buying too much stuff, Catherine.
Uh-huh. Right, okay, you're feeling spendy.
Well, and this before that news, I've got an LP I bought, and I've got a CD I put. I've not even opened them, right? I'm a bit like young Mr. Lee. And last night, I bought a new phone that I didn't need.
Right.
So, I think it's just, again, part of the lockdown boredom, and also my... Probably part of my addictive personality,
yeah.
I think.
I was going to say, it's, Ian talks about whack-a-mole, whereas you get it sorted in one direction and then it pops up somewhere else.
That's
There's probably a little bit of that, but unless you're buying, islands and things you can't afford, just be kind to yourself, do you know what I mean? You could be spending your money on worse.
Yeah.
And progress, not perfection, there's another one.
Yeah. So do you want to buy a phone off me?
Actually, my phone started to do that. You know, they build in obsolescence.
Yes, yes.
So, I've had this phone and I decided that I was not going to, fund the man anymore. I would buy it. I had some money put aside and I bought it straight out, so I didn't have to get involved in any sort of contracts and stuff, because I think that's a swizz. And by the time you end your contract, they say that they're doing you a favour by upgrading you, and really what they're doing is giving you another loan. So I thought, right, I'm going to tidy this lot up and I'm going to make sure that I buy outright, and I won't be tempted that way ever again. But of course, now I've had this phone for ages and the battery is crap. I mean, I'm talking, it's every day I'm having conversations with people and saying, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to go and plug in. And so you end up in the most undignified position with your face quite close to the floor, where you've had to plug in and stuff. I just know that the battery is on its way out, and it's a trick, isn't it? It's a trick to make you buy another phone.
Well, it is. And of course, all of these things are thought about like loads of steps back in the factory, that they are actually designed to have a certain life. And because obviously it's part of their business plan to make people buy a new one. And that's always been the way. I didn't need that phone. But anyway, it'll be exciting for 10 minutes to open it and look at it and play with it. Nice new shiny screen and all sorts. So.
Yeah. And then you'll go, what have I done this for? It's not going to change my life.
Just on general lockdown, I've already comments you've had about the fact I'm overeating, and I bought a replacement toilet seat.
God, what's the link there?
Well, the one I had was the one that was in when I bought the house.
Oh, right, okay.
2014.
Right.
So, and it's a shocking pink colour. Does my head in. But I thought, now I'm sober, I can replace it, I thought.
Treat yourself, live the high life.
It must be straightforward to replace a toilet seat.
Oh, God,
no.
yeah. Right.
So I'm doing it, I'm twisting and turning, and then I fell over, did myself a mischief by falling on my bottom. And then I realised, after I thought I'd done it, I went downstairs and got the instructions out. I've done it wrong.
Oh, well, of course you had. So there's instructions for this thing. Because normally it's just two wing nuts and, isn't it? It's just two wing nuts and a washer.
No, it won't. No. This had it had two different methods of fixture. I should have read the instructions before I started, but I didn't. Something to be learnt in that, isn't there?
Probably, yeah. But, you know, it gives you something to do, and none of us are pressed for time at the moment, are they? Let's be honest.
Yeah. But anyway, I just wanted to say, you know, good luck in the message of this, but good luck in your artwork, because I think it's tremendous what you're doing there.
That's really kind of you. Thanks very much, Alistair. Take care of yourself.
You're
I'll
welcome.
Speak to you again.
And you. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye. 0344-499-1000. Sarah, let's have a word with Sarah. Hey, Sarah.
Hi, Catherine.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. I was just wondering what you've been doing over quarantine.
God, what have I been doing over quarantine? I have been I've had very little alone time, I'll tell you that for nothing. So toilet trips have been a bit longer than probably they should do, just because I could lock a door and spend some time on my own. But other than that, what have I been doing? Just putting one foot in front of the other, really. I started painting again, which I hadn't done for 20-odd years, and found I really enjoyed it. And it's something to do while the kids are homeschooling, because they're pretty good at sort of, they just go through the list of things to do. And so I'm sitting with them if they want any help or whatever, but largely they go under their own steam. So it's been boring, but I suppose boring is good, right? I'd rather be bored and safe at home than having dramatic times going to hospitals or whatever. Because at the start of all this stuff, I've got to admit, when they opened the Nightingale Hospital and all this was happening, it felt like we're in the middle of something apocalyptic. And it turns out probably boring is the best case scenario. So I can deal with that. What have you been doing?
Well, I got furloughed, so I've been trying to find a way to get a weekly income. So what I've been doing is selling feet pics.
Right.
On this website, and it's I recommend all the people who have been furloughed to do it, because this week I earned £5,000
from your feet.
Yeah, from my feet.
Now, have you got particularly good feet? I mean, what are they into?
Well, I just take pictures of my feet.
But have you? I mean, are they into painted toenails, or are they just not that fussy? It's just got to be, you know, five toes. Standard foot.
Well, I painted one of them, but didn't have time to paint the other ones.
So how did you come across this website, and where did the idea come from?
Well, it was actually my cousin Sven who recommended it to me, and then I've just been doing it ever since.
What? So Sven is a foot model?
Yeah, in Sweden.
Right. Okay. Well, it's fascinating stuff. Thanks very much for that, Sarah. Certainly.
You're very welcome, Catherine.
Thanks very much. Bye-bye now, Sarah. Certainly a side hustle I hadn't thought of, but, you know, if you've got feet, apparently there's a market for it. 0344-499-1000. No, I didn't either. 0344-499-1000. Is the number. Another money-making scheme, old jockstraps, apparently. Here's one. Elvis Presley's bedazzled jockstrap hits auction block for $35,000. This is from the New York Post, which I have to say has got the most New York way of delivering stories I have ever read. You can own the king of all cups later this month when Elvis Presley's custom bedazzled jockstrap goes up for auction. I know, it's the one we've all been waiting for auction-wise. The rhinestone studded athletic support, complete with the king's initials in blue diamond L's. What's a blue diamond L? Oh, it's like diamond tape, but I don't know, posher. On the waistband is expected to fetch £36,000 when it goes on the block as part of the Elvis Presley Museum collection being sold by Paul Fraser Collectibles. The strap was made by a fan and worn by Presley for years. Oh my God, it just gets better and better. An ancient jock strap worn. Mind you, if people are buying foot pictures. Worn by Presley for years until his 1977 death. It's extravagant, absurd, sexually potent. This rhinestone-studded jockstrap is pure Elvis Presley. It sounds scratchy, and I think it would probably wreck your the inside of your trousers, but I'm assuming he was wearing trousers at the time, and maybe that's my assumption. This rhinestone-studded jockstrap is pure Elvis Presley. I'm sure the new owner won't be able to resist wearing it out on a Saturday night. I think they might. The Elvis magic will work wonders, I'm certain. This is a rare opportunity to own an intimate piece of the king, Paul Fraser Collectibles' Daniel Wade told the Daily Mail. And yes, he would say that, wouldn't he? Because otherwise it's just a little bit weird wearing a dead man's underpants. 0344 499 1000. Oh, Gatford, I'm glad you called. Hey, how are you doing?
Yeah, very well, thank you for actually. You're glad I'm called? I don't think I've ever heard that on this show.
I know, because wait for this. Okay. You were the highlight of yesterday's rabbit hole show, according to my kids.
I'm so glad I entertained young people.
It wasn't first of all, how did you manage to get? How did you manage to scribble all over the screen in the first instance?
Well, there was just this thing that someone else did it first.
Yeah, I didn't think you were the only one.
I wasn't the only one, but someone else did it first, and I looked at the top and it said annotate, and I thought, well, that means draw in English. So I started drawing my name, and it came up on the screen. I'm like, what the heck?
Uh-oh. So, yeah, that's probably like, why you're never going to be a master criminal.
Yeah, and then I couldn't find that option, so I owned up. It was fun yesterday. It was nice to see everyone, actually. So,
wasn't it a funny... I'm kind of wondering whether we ever need to go out to venues again, because I liked it the way it was.
Yeah.
You know, and the people that wanted to be there had nowhere else to be. They hadn't got to worry about babysitters or drinking too much or, you know, how they were going to get home or any of that stuff or, you
and
know,
I think
getting
it
dressed
was
up.
Good having the kids there. I think that was a benefit. And apart from, I think, one person who maybe spoke in a foreign language at one point.
French,
it was family-friendly. Yeah, French.
Yeah, I thought that was a bit mean, actually, knowing that kids were watching. I didn't think it was funny. But... yeah, there's always one. I'm surprised with when the writing started that none of you drew, like, crying cactuses or anything like that, because I thought that was definitely going to happen.
I think it's because we knew there were kids watching, you know? We're being sensible for once.
Yeah, I really appreciated that. And like you say, it kind of, it helped us, having spoken to Ian about it, it helped us having sort of boundaries there and knowing that we were there. It was just daft fun, right? We didn't have to be edgy. We didn't have to be rude. We didn't have to be shocking. It was just us all hanging out, and
it's a bit like, as you say, because you do the late night show. You know, there's this kind of like fact that you get the people who perhaps are, you know, wouldn't get on during the daytime, shall we say? Mm-hmm. But being on in the evening and that kind of time was just really nice. And as you say, no one had anywhere to go. There was no rushing. You know, it was good.
Yeah, there's only a tiny bit of violence, and that was by the baby.
Well,
But they don't know any better at that age, do they? They are very violent.
Well, there was also babies. That time that Ian ripped the glove off. I think that was a bit of violence as well. So it wasn't why I rang, but it was good to hear that it was my contribution was appreciated by my children.
You were the big favourite. You were the big favourite.
The reason I was ringing, to let you know that I've had a very normal day. And it felt really nice. My sister and brother-in-law had a barbecue. My brother-in-law bought a new barbecue that we got him for his birthday. And we sat socially distanced in the garden.
Mm-hmm.
And we sat and we played games and we had barbecue food, like I imagine a lot of other people did today. And
do you think that what's happened has meant that people feel less weird about stretching the boundaries of social distancing? Because,
I think the rules, I wouldn't say the rules have been relaxed. I think the rules have been clarified, maybe, and that's good. And it made it, you know, the fact that you can go and see people in your family. I'm very lucky my family all live within walking distance, so I didn't have to drive, you know, any miles. you know, 260 odd. So, you know, it was good, and it felt really normal. And I did a nice thing. As I was walking up, it was one of those people that had left stuff outside they were getting rid of.
Yeah.
You know, sort of like bric-a-brac. In there, four vinyl albums that I gave to my brother-in-law, who's a big vinyl collector, one of which he loves. It's Bruce Springsteen, Born to Run.
Ooh.
And he was quite happy with that, and I thought that was quite a good, you know, and I thought, it was just one of those spur of the moments. I just saw it and thought, oh, he'd like that. And today just felt like it kind of felt like a normal day.
Yeah.
Which it hasn't for a very long time.
So what do you think's changed?
I don't know that anything has changed. I just think I had no expectations of what today was going to be. I knew what I was doing. I had plans. Maybe that was it.
Mm-hmm.
Having plans, you know, for a long time, for the last 6 weeks, we haven't had many plans. You know, it's been stay indoors, get your food, get your meds, stay indoors.
Yeah.
And for the first time, it was like, and it was the same thing on Saturday night. I played some board games online with some friends. So I had something for Saturday, your thing on Sunday, and then this on Monday. It felt normal. It felt good. But still being, you know, boundaried and stuff.
Okay.
So, and I think I'm getting used to lockdown more. I think I'm adapting better. Wouldn't say every day is great, but I would say on the whole, I'm adapting.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's great. That's great. And I think that there are certain ways people are handling it. You know, first of all, there are some people who are still angry about it. There are some people who are insistent that it's an overreaction and, you know, they're feeling that the danger is less than what they're being told and they feel like they know better. And, you know, and who knows? Who knows what the truth is? We're having to hand over a significant part of our destiny. Is it destiny? Too big a word. Our power to someone else's, we assume, superior knowledge or more of an overview. You know, there have been instances recently where I think we've been given reason to doubt whether that is quite as sweeping as we thought it was. And I do wonder what today's events, or the events that started last night and continued into today, will do for people deciding that maybe they can freestyle it a bit more.
I think the key word that I heard was this idea of judgment. He used his own judgment, and I think that's going to make people think, well, okay, I won't listen to what others are saying. I'll decide for myself. And that could be a problem, or if we trust the British public, it could be fine. But in examples of recent time, that hasn't worked out too well. So,
I do think that most people can justify a certain amount of, I don't know. People can find a way to justify what they want to do.
Yeah. If you feel passionate about doing something, you will find a way to make others believe you. If you all try to believe you, so.
Yeah.
By the way, banger of a tune at the top of the hour, by the way.
Oh, yeah. No subliminal message there at all, either.
No. you were paying tribute to Italy. Weren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Nice to speak to you, Gatford. Take care.
Take care, it is. Bye.
We'll speak again. Bye-bye. 0344-499-1000. Giselle.
Hello.
Hey, what's going on?
I think, you know, if you're in a lucky position to a point, I think lockdown is boring. And so for me, I haven't been outside at all since the 25th of March. And that is because everywhere around me is communal, and the suggestion is that I don't leave the house for medical reasons. So I've had to find things to do. So I was waiting for you to do a solo show so I could ask you something. Because to be honest with you, I've nothing else to do other than wait until an appropriate moment. So with the artwork that you've been doing, I don't have much experience with painting.
Right.
But I do with drawing. I tend to prefer to draw in pen. But my grandmother, who died a few years ago, no longer with us, but she was an oil painter by trade.
Right.
And my mother made her own wedding dress, so she was good at textile. So there's obviously like a potentially a strand in sort of genetics for
creativity. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. But I do wonder what your opinion is on whether if somebody is good at one thing within creativity, let's say, they can be good at another, because I'm not well experienced at painting or indeed textiles, but I don't know if I could be with the skills that I have at drawing. So I wondered if you think it is adaptable, because you obviously, as you say, you've had a break from painting, but it's not a skill that you have forgotten.
No.
But it's obviously something that was established. So I just wonder if you think it's transferable or not. I just genuinely interested in your opinion.
I used to draw for fun when I was really little. My granddad, I used to go around to my grandma and granddad's on a weekend, and paper and pen would be given out, and we would draw together, me and my granddad. This is the different granddad to the coal bunker granddad. That was mostly eating sweets. But my other granddad used to sit in his chair a lot, and I think maybe that was just his way of doing something that didn't involve getting up. But he was great. And, you know, we would talk about what we were drawing and you know, critique very gently. He would critique mine very gently. And, you know, it was fun. You know, it was fun. And and my kids will sit down and draw because it's, I don't know, I think that maybe there is something in that. Maybe, and I can't speak for everybody, but my mum is great with a sewing machine and she can make you a model, you know. She's the one that would be able to help you make something brilliant for your school project and stuff. And it's something that I try to do with my kid. And I wonder whether there is something in being able to visualise something that isn't there yet. And that can be applied to, you know, sewing or whatever it might be, model making. But it's probably not true for everybody. But I think the main thing is that I was encouraged to have a go. And the fact that my parents, well, my mum used to draw, my dad painted a little bit, actually, now I come to think of it. My granddad used to sit and draw, meant that the materials were available, the encouragement was there. It's a bit like if you have books around the house, right? And so my kids have grown up thinking that reading is fun rather than something you've got to do, sit down and do, so you can write something in a book so the teacher gets off your back. You know, there's different ways of approaching it, but it's difficult to know. I suppose that's nature and nurture, isn't it, what we're talking about there, really?
Yeah, I agree. I just wondered if it was kind of transferable between, you know, if you can paint, can you draw as well? Can you do textiles? But I suppose that point about whether you can visualise creating something and then materialising it.
Yeah, working out how you make a shape.
Would be transferable, yeah.
Yeah, I think it probably is. I think it probably is. In my case, you know, probably not for... There'll be someone listening to this now who's brilliant, you know, graphic artist or whatever, and can't... you know, sofa toffee, but and I'm not saying that that's necessarily hand in hand, but I think that you have a head start if you can imagine something that isn't there and how you would go about achieving a representation of it somehow. But have a go, Giselle. The great thing that there is now that there wasn't when I used to paint 20 years ago is YouTube, right? So if you are stuck in a rut where everything you draw looks the same, or everything you paint looks the same, or you're not quite sure how you would use certain materials. I mean, pencils now are so much better. And, you know, the internet means that you can get hold of some brilliant art, you know, supplies that you wouldn't be able to get unless you lived near a specialist art shop back in the day. It's all there, but you don't know what you can do with it until you see someone else show you sometimes. And there are some brilliant tutorials on the internet. I would definitely have a look at that and get inspired and, you know, take a little bit of inspiration, if nothing else. I've found some of them, some of my crappiest experiments were trying to replicate exactly what someone else did. And the best thing I do is, right, okay, I see what you've done there. Okay, well, maybe I can try that, but it doesn't have to look exactly like yours, you know. But have a go, have a go. We've got nothing but time. Why not?
Yep, time is not something we're short of.
Nice to speak to you, Giselle.
You too.
Take care. 0344 499 1000. Let's take a little break and I'll be back in a sec.
Late Night with Catherine Boyle on Talk Radio.
0344 499 1000. Thanks for ringing. We've got Bruce, we've got James, but then, of course, we have got room for you too. So don't be shy. It's just me and you. 0344 499 1000. Hello, Bruce.
Hey, how are you? How are you doing, Catherine?
I'm all right, Tar. Nice to hear from you. What you got?
No, I was just thinking what you said about the Elvis Presley jockstrap from the New York Post, which was kind of interesting because the night that he died, he had been playing racquetball, in fact, I think.
Oh, my God.
So I wonder if he was wearing that, but you never know. But the other
this
thing,
very much looks like a party jockstrap to me rather than a fully functional sports support.
He wasn't wearing it down to the racquetball court. But I think the other thing is that, you know, in this day and age, it could be converted into a mask with...
Oh, my word.
No, because the jockstrap, actually, at the very beginning of this, and, you know, it actually, the jockstrap kind of lends itself well to becoming a makeshift mask. But anyway...
Yeah, but, you first, Bruce. You first.
Okay. But actually, what I'm waiting for is I'm waiting for the local tennis courts here to... to open up because they haven't opened up yet. So it's been since the 13th? Yeah, so it's already, and they just haven't opened up. I think they're very wary of.
Where are you?
I'm in Whitstable,
right
in Kent. So I think they're just wary of, you know, transmission or whatever.
I think you're right. A friend of ours is a tennis coach over at a sort of local park we've got. So we've got these outdoor tennis courts that you can hire. And there are pretty strict rules as to how you can play, but you can play there now. I think that's kind of been encouraged, hasn't it, by the government now? They're trying to open up golf, tennis and stuff. You've got to take your own ball. You've got to mark it. You're the only one who can touch it. That's the other thing. And I think...
You either stay on the same side or you make sure to change on all what's it called, opposite sides of the court and all this kind of thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a funny time. I think I used to live in Indonesia. I lived there for many years, and they're in lockdown. And of course, yesterday was Ramadan, the end of Ramadan, Eid al-Fitr in Indonesia, Eid, we say here in England.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've had to, in Indonesia, it's this huge exodus of people from the major cities like Jakarta, Bandung, and everything, and they go back to their hometowns. But they all have followed it, right? Of course, in Indonesia, there's much more of a kind of militaristic approach to rule, and people tend to follow the rules, even though they also balk at the rules too. But you know, they had to do that. They had to stay in lockdown and not go home. And usually, what they call Lebaran in Indonesia, the holiday, it's a whole week, and everybody's trying to get home and get the tickets and get on buses. So they followed the rules there, but here, I go shopping for my parents. My parents are both in their 80s, and the amazing thing is my father is having chemotherapy, and he's still getting it, and he's still driving there by himself. But I just feel like, you know, people are kind of like starting to flout the rules, which I guess is understandable after being in lockdown and being prevented from doing things. But
I do wonder whether the quote-unquote new normal has now got mundane, and it's not turned into, for the lucky majority, it has not turned in to the dramatic apocalyptic thing we were kind of braced for.
Exactly.
And I'm saying we are lucky, and I'm not in any way kind of belittling what's actually happened. It's bloody awful. And, you know, nearly 40,000 people dead is not something that we can say that is something we can get used to, or we should get used to. It is shocking. But I think for the lucky majority, you know, they're starting now to think, what am I staying in for, you know? And stuff like this that happened today, taking the politics out of it, it does make you think, oh, right, so when they say use your common sense, the elastic maybe is longer than we thought it was. And I do worry that that's going to lead to people deciding to take risks that don't necessarily just endanger themselves.
Exactly. Well, I mean, my mother's, you know, she's 82. She's lived through so many different things in her life. And at the beginning of the day when we were talking about, you know, the whole issue of Dominic Cummings and everything, and she was quite, you know, she said, oh, they're all ganging up on him and it's all political and whatever. But then I think when he actually gave that, when he gave that press conference, and just the fact that he was in that setting, and he seemed quite dismissive of any kind of question, even though he did do the, you know, the whole caveat of, you know, well, I realize some people may be upset and stuff, but I feel like, and then at the end, my mother was like, well, this is ridiculous. Like, how can you say these things? And the whole thing about the beauty spot, and I mean, it just is almost like...
He was a lot meeker than we come to expect, right? But at the same time, he didn't really give any ground at all, did he? He's not sorry.
No.
He thinks he did the right thing. He thinks what he did was reasonable. Sorry you don't feel that way is pretty much what we got.
Yeah, I mean, I think if he had actually been a bit more humble, and even if it was just, you know, even if it was just a facade or whatever, but I guess that's not his character, right? So he believes that he's completely justified in what he's doing. But this whole kind of thing that he can shape the rules according to his judgments, right, which seems... I mean, a lot of it seems so disingenuous to say that, well, I thought I should do this and drive up there.
I found it weird from the moment he said he'd gone home and you know, I was photographed running out of Downing Street because I was going home to help my wife out. She was very ill. But then going back to work 2 hours later, from that moment, I was like, mate, we're not supposed to do that. We're not supposed to do that. Am I a mug for thinking that there are absolutes in this? No, I don't think I am. Mm. You know, this is a mistake. And I know she wasn't coughing, because I think he raised that later on. But we don't know enough about this virus to be sure that there is an absolute checklist. You know, there's stuff coming out all the time. And if he's that important, he's working with important people. Out of respect for his colleagues, at the very least, you stay away.
Exactly.
You stay away.
What I also thought was interesting is how it turns out that he hasn't actually been tested for it, right? So, interesting, even though he says he had the symptoms and et cetera, but he never actually got tested. So, it's all a bit sketchy, I don't know. But,
absolutely. But, you know, I'm more interested now because he's not going to go anywhere. He's going to get backed up. There are enough people backing him up, I think, that he's going to hang tight, is what I see. And something else will happen soon and it will take the emphasis off him, is what he's probably hoping. But I'm more interested in now how it's going to shape other people's behaviour and how it's going to impact on the average Joe. But listen, I've got to go because we need to take some news. But so nice to speak to you, Bruce. Take care of yourself. 0344 499 1000. You're listening to Talk Radio.
Late Night with Catherine Boyle on Talk Radio.
I had to escape. The city was sticky and cruel. I should have called you first, but I was dying to get to you. your sweet kisses, your arms open wide. This fever for you is just burning me up inside. I drove all night to get to you. Is that a crime? I drove.
Yeah, is it all right? It's all right to drive all night to to do certain things, but that's perfectly reasonable. But not with a fever. No, I wouldn't do that, Cyndi Lauper. 0344 499 1000. Driving 30 minutes to test your eyesight is apparently okay. So, God. 0344 499 1000. Let's speak to James. Hey, James.
Hello, greetings, lovely Kath. How the devil are you this Friday night?
I'm all right. I'm staying in tonight. What are you up to?
Well, I've had a lovely day. I did my radio show in the morning, recorded that, which is good, so that's going well. And then I did a bit of yoga this afternoon, but I needed to do some yoga after seeing Mr. Cummings' convoluted press conference. I'm quite a fan of this government, got to be honest, quite a fan, but... how can I put this? Okay, we look at numbers, right? And we say, you know, 36,000, 37, 40, nearly 40,000 people that have died.
Yeah.
The O2 Arena, you know, probably quite a few of us have been at the O2. You know, I've been at Little Mix with, you know, my daughter or whatever, screaming away, you know, have my little wiggle on. And that's full to the brim, and that's 20,000 people.
Yeah.
So that's two of them. Mm-hmm. That's two of them. And you know what? It's all over now. It's fine. Everything's fine. Because the problem is, okay, is that we've had to have such draconian rules, quite rightly. And the thing about draconian rules and command economies, all this sort of stuff, is you have to do what you're told. And everybody out there has done what they're told, apart from a few individuals. And those individuals... You know, particularly when they're at the top, they then give us all the excuse of, oh, well, if it's good for him, it's good for Gavin. It's good for Gavin. It's good for Gavin, yeah. And as you rightly say, it then softens. The time when he did this, we've got to remember, was at the absolute peak of these rules.
And when there was no kind of common sense get out, the common sense thing... I think is particularly dodgy, because here's the thing, James. Everyone thinks they've got a good sense of humour, know how to dress for the most part, and common sense. We can't all be right.
Exactly.
We can't all be right.
Exactly.
And human beings have got a way of justifying their actions and saying, well, I wouldn't have done it, but this and this and this. Yeah, do you know what? The fact that we've been locked in and, if you're very lucky, kept away from the horror that is going on elsewhere means that I think a lot of people are taking for granted the level of risk out there.
I had a patient, relatively similar sort of to the time, that I picked up, and she was very, very poorly in her 80s, and she had quite a few family around because they were a couple of doors away and stuff. And they were all social distancing as we took her out the house, and she was really, really poorly, you know, and I kind of was thinking, oh, this is not good. This is not good at all. And her husband said to me, all right, okay, where do I sit? And I said, I'm sorry, sir, you can't come to the hospital.
Oh,
and
no.
He looked at me in tears. And apparently he's the sort of man, the first time he's ever cried, basically. And he said to me, he has not slept a night apart from his wife in 60 years of marriage or whatever it was. Okay, so, you know, that was for that distance... would have been about 10 minutes to hospital. About 10 minute drive. But if you're in power, then you can do whatever the hell you want, and then you can go and say, I'm going to test my eyesight on a, you know, on a little test drive to a beauty spot. I mean,
but by the way, with your kid in the back of the car.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's just completely and utterly ridiculous, and it takes the whole country for an absolute mug. And I just think that this is damaging the PM's reputation at a point where he needs to be, whether one voted for him or not, he's somebody that we need to be behind, because he has to make very difficult decisions. Mm. And it's, you know, it's been essentially a time of war. And, you know, and all of the evaluation will happen, and reviews will happen afterwards. But we need to be getting behind the Prime Minister. And his whole credibility has now been shot to pieces because of the actions of this man. And I'm really, actually really upset about it, because, you know, I've seen the tragedy that this disease is. And I have no doubt that this woman would have died. I have no doubt. I didn't find out, but I have no doubt. And many of the people that I've seen have died, and they died, you know, pretty horrible deaths, really, on their own.
Yeah.
You know? Well, it's not right. It's not right at all. And, yeah. Sorry, I'm a bit impassioned.
No, but it's got all of us that way. But then I was watching the half hour late, which I think is another thing that just speaks volumes. The half hour. Listen, if someone is half an hour late, I tend to think that's on purpose. 10 minutes, 12 minutes, 9 minutes, an odd number. Half an hour seems pretty exact to me. And I do wonder whether that was, listen, this is his job. Premeditated to unsettle people, to put the journalists on the back foot, to impassion them so that maybe they were angry and they would somehow look aggressive. I don't know what that was, but half an hour? I wasn't even half an hour late for my wedding. And that was my time to shine, James. So if I was trying to come across as someone who was eager to explain myself and respectful of other people's feelings on something that is potentially inflammatory, I would be there on time. I would be there on time.
And to me, this is Malcolm Tucker style, because what he's done is he's done the perfect spin doctor skill, which is he's taken all the hits on the chin. So he's taken good old punches from Beth Rigby from Sky, which was, you know, very vociferous. You know, he's taken loads of that, and that's great. And then, of course, then the PM comes out, the thing says, well, you know, you've had the opportunity to ask a question. You know, you've asked him now, so I mean, I can't comment further.
So that's the end of that?
It's for us to make art to decide. It's not us as the public to decide. Well, I think the public has pretty decided. Yeah.
But of course, it's the media that's whipping this up. This is nothing to do with the common man. It's just the media bubble.
Yeah. It's all generous fault. Absolutely. But yeah, it has really upset me, because I just think it's, what scares me is, you know, this is not over. This is not over by any means. You know, still 120 or 130 people died in the last 24 hours. That's a very, very large number, a large amount of families. And, you know, once we're all mixing and we're doing our own thing, there is no way that this second peak is absolutely possible. You know, the Nightingale hospitals, all those thousands of beds, they're still on standby. Nobody's closed everything.
I find it very odd that some people are angry that the Nightingale hospital's unused, to say it's a waste of money. Thank God it's a waste of money. Do you know what? I'd rather have it this way. I would rather have it this way. I just find it all so, I find it all so galling that, somehow it's kind of been flipped back onto the people who are abiding by the rules, who are upset about this. It's like that somehow we're the ones that got it wrong and misunderstood. It was pretty clear.
And it's this idea that it's the mainstream media, and that's highlighted over and over and again, and often by people, to be honest, on my side of an argument. But the reality is that the media, and you as a you know, very accomplished journalist, you know, you represent the people. You're not going to go as a journalist and say, oh, I'm going to do the complete opposite to what the public feel on an issue, because that wouldn't make sense. It wouldn't sell any papers. So therefore, the media is representing pretty much the majority of our views, I think.
And I've been, you know, I've been telling people to stay indoors the whole time. I've been telling people to... People have been sacrificing really important moments in their lives and the lives of their loved ones over this period of time because they felt that the bigger goal was worth it. It seemed that not all of us are pulling towards the bigger goal, you know? Special circumstances, you know...
Yeah, we all know people that have cancelled their weddings, that have not gone to funerals, that have had one or two people at a funeral. I had a colleague that died of COVID, and, you know, people watching their funeral streams.
The point was made during the run-up to the, what would you call it, this afternoon, press conference, whatever, that it's not Dominic Cunning's fault. No, it isn't, but he was fundamental in shaping the rules. So,
yes, absolutely. And quite rightly, when in Scotland, when the Chief Medical Advisor and Officer of Scotland went and broke her own rules, which, you know, she did that, she quite rightly was asked to resign. And Nicola Sturgeon said, you know, this is going to be difficult for her because, you know, she wants her counsel. But there is a point that it's right or wrong. And, you know, if he resigned and he did the right thing, then he would come across, I think, as an honourable man. But, I just think it's completely and utterly wrong. It's, that's got me most upset.
I've had an explanatory text from Spence from Portsmouth saying, have you ever considered that flouting of the guidelines, brackets, not laws, you can get fined for them, and in some cases, jailed, by Cummings, Dr. Calderwood and Professor Ferguson, almost universally deemed abhorrent and disobedient, indicates more clearly their exposure to and understanding of the mysterious science. You know that if you put your hand in a fire, it will burn, so you don't, says Spence from Portsmouth. Okay, well, Dr. Calderwood and Professor Ferguson, maybe. But Cummings caught it. Yeah. Boris caught it. People that were working in very close proximity in those first few weeks, and Boris, by his own admission, was going shaking hands with people despite having been told that it was a bad idea. They caught it. Yeah. So don't tell me they understand the science more than the average Joe, because I don't believe they do, and I don't think they took it seriously, not personally, and certainly not professionally in the first few weeks of it.
The science actually is pretty clear science. I don't think you have to be a complete expert to understand our values and to understand the fact of what a pandemic is. You just have to look at history in 1918 and see the double dip of the second wave that you got in 1918. You know, if any of the listeners want to go and see what, you know, a virus can do, and this, just because we live in this great world where we've got our credit cards, we've got our mobile phones and everything else, viruses don't work like that, you know. They do not work like that, and it is more than possible that this could be around for a very, very, very long time, and I just think it is so, so upsetting, because now everybody will just go and bend those rules to the way that they want to, because we're only human, and if we can bend rules, we will bend rules.
I put something up about the fact that I've been staying away from my mum over the weekend, and I had a message from Anna, what's her name? She's a former politician. And she said to me, yes. And she said to me something like, well, you know, you're a good daughter and you know best. And I responded to her, I said, yeah, my mum's shielding, so I'm staying away regardless of what what my heart is telling me, because I'm not willing to risk my mother's life.
Absolutely.
And I will err on the side of caution. And I think most people are doing that. So, you know, freestyling with people's lives is not what I'm going to be doing.
Well, again, can I say, it sounds amazing. You are so great at doing this. I really love your show. It's awesome. You're doing a great job, and great with the art as well. I'm going to have to buy one of your beads because it looks superb.
Ah, James, you're the best. Thanks very much for ringing. People are going to think I'm paying you. By the way, I do have your address, and I'll be making that bank transfer very soon. 0344 499 1000. You're listening to Talk Radio. Back in a minute. I've got loads of calls to come up. We've got Derek, we've got Daniel, we've got James, but there's always room for you. 0344 499 1000.
Late Night with Catherine Boyle on Talk Radio.
0344 499 1000. Let's go, Derek. Hey, Derek, what's going on?
Hi, Garth, how are you doing?
Okay. I'm all right.
You've inspired me into thinking about starting drawing again.
I draw
all the time as a kid. I always had a pen, a pencil, paper, something like that in my hands from early primary school. excuse me, all the time, always drawn. See, when you're drawing a face, an animal, anything like that, do you have the face to the left or to the right, or can you do both?
Oh, there's a point. I don't know, because what I tend to do is look online and find inspiration in a photo or a picture or something, you know, and so I've never noticed I lean one way or t'other. What about you, Derek? Are you particularly...
No. The reason I'm asking is for some strange reason, no matter if I'm drawing something just out of my head, the face is always pointed to the left, or if it's an animal, say a horse or whatever, it's always facing to the left. I just wondered why that was.
Well, that is a strange one.
Is that being left-handed, right-handed? I don't know.
Yeah, do you start with the face when you start drawing?
Yeah, I do. Yes, I do.
But that might be why you work across the page that way.
Yeah. And another thing, remember me phoning up a couple of weeks ago saying that my mum got the COVID and she beat it, she fought it. She's, I don't know if you remember, I called a couple of weeks ago.
I think I do.
Ian was worried about his mum. Someone in her home had got it and he was worried.
Yeah. Is your mum in a home?
My mum's in a home now, yes, she is now. She was in hospital from January from something else, but she's actually in 24-hour care now, but she's doing absolutely brilliant.
Oh, that's so good.
After catching the COVID, it's great news, because all you hear is doom and gloom.
It would be good to hear a few more sort of recovery stories, wouldn't it? And also the aftermath, because, you know, there's been talk today of it affecting potentially your eyesight. Have you found that your mum's got, her eyesight's got any worse, or?
With the condition that she's in just now, she doesn't even really know that it's even going on in the world just
right now.
Right, okay. Yeah, she's in a way it's a bit of a blessing, she doesn't know. So we can't really tell those types of things just now.
Right. But she's doing all right in herself.
She's happy and she's fighting fit. She's never had a cigarette since January, and she's still asking for a cigarette. But she's
forgotten that she smokes, but she hasn't forgotten that now.
Yeah, but she doesn't know that she's actually stopped, because that's been about 5 months now. Yeah. But you've inspired me. I'm going to get myself a pencil and some paper, and I'm going to start drawing again.
Do it. It's just, it allows you to while away a bit of time, to concentrate on something and to not be thinking about stuff that we've got no control over. And just draw.
Just drawing. Just drawing mad things, just whatever comes into your head. What was your favourite pencil at school?
Favourite pencil?
Yeah, for the
first draw with. We were ever given HBs. Why did you have a luxury range to choose from?
I had to be a 2B for drawing. A 2B.
I don't think they ever offered us an HB
was too hard.
I know. I used to draw my granddad's biro that he got from the bookies. I would draw with anything.
Yeah. But they've got horrible little bookie pens now with just little tiny bits in them. No good.
Yeah, exactly. Those stubby things. I would draw with anything. Derek. I think it's good for your mind.
Yeah, I'm going to go and get some paper and some pencils, and I'm going to start drawing again.
All right. Yeah. And lots of love to your mum as well. Thanks for giving us that little update.
Okay.
Take care. Thanks. Bye, Derek. Bye-bye. 0344-499-1000. Daniel, hey, what's going on with you?
Hello. So I have a little problem. I have some headaches, chronic, persistent headaches.
Oh, no.
And the thing is, what helps me is fish oil, you know, the omega-3 and omega-6 fish oil. But there's a specific fish oil that helps me more that's called krill oil. You know what krill is? There's jellyfish that's quite abundant in the ocean, jellyfish.
Yeah.
But this is it's called krill. And it's
krill.
It's like a shrimp.
Yeah, I know whales like to eat it, don't they?
Yeah, it's very, very abundant in the North Pole and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is, this is not available in the NHS, the krill oil. There's just regular fish oil.
Right.
So the thing is, yeah, I would like to, I have to buy it online. It's a bit expensive. And because the thing is, when I'm with headaches, I just take a bit more, you know, like. And, yeah, I have to take supplements to help me. The other thing that helps me is, like, sometimes I cannot have, I don't sleep well. So I take this natural supplement, like kind of hormone that our body produces called melatonin.
Right, yeah, melatonin.
And I have to buy it as well over the counter, like, because the doctors say, well, this is not, is more for old people. And
right. So what are they saying, that it's not effective for you, or it's just not something that they would be able to prescribe?
They don't want to prescribe yet. Prescribe me anything for sleep.
I guess it would be an alternative therapy, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I've to buy it on like they don't prescribe. Like usually they say that these things are addictive and
not krill oil, surely.
No, it's not. And there's also, you know, there used to be a medication from a very, very prominent labs called Viagra, you know, the...
I'm aware of its work, yes.
The erectile dysfunction medication.
Yeah.
And you used to require a prescription for it, mm-hmm. but now it's available without a prescription.
Yeah.
But the thing is, there's another medication for diabetes. That's called metformin. It's a very popular medication for diabetes type 2. And the thing is, you need to have a prescription to take it. You cannot take it over the counter. And the thing is, some people, like scientists, they say that if you take it regularly, you live two years more. Like your lifespan is...
How do you know... How do you know that you're living 2 years more?
They do it with mammals, like mice, you know, rats and stuff. Like they increase the lifespan. Like they infer that for humans, you would live 2 years more if you take metformin on a regular basis. So the thing is, you cannot have it because you need a prescription. Like
Because the diabetics need it, don't they?
Viagra, it helps with the heart. You know, if you have heart disease and you take Viagra,
headaches. It gives you headaches, doesn't it?
Yeah, I suppose so. I don't take it, but maybe I suppose. Actually, I don't know because believe it.
I know that's a side effect, headaches.
I never had Viagra in my life, believe it or not. I'm 42 years old, but actually, I had it once. But
Daniel, you told me a very easy fib there and immediately came clean.
I'm considering having it to see if it helps me with
It'll give you a headache if you've got No, don't take
because
Viagra for headaches.
The thing is, Viagra, it activates some mechanism that...
I know what mechanism it activates.
Nitrous oxide that is a kind of vasodilator. And I think it will help with your heart condition. Yeah,
well,
I think so.
Can I make a recommendation?
Talk with your doctor.
Talk to your doctor. to your doctor. Because I think there are probably other things they can give you before they start with, Viagra.
Yeah.
All right?
Okay, thank you, Catherine.
Don't experiment on yourself.
I'm waiting for your paintings. And actually, I didn't understand what is the website for the FitPix.
For the what Pix?
For the FitPix.
I don't know. Google it. Managed to find other things on there. Thank you very much indeed, Daniel. I'm going to be honest with you, Daniel. I don't really believe that young lady made £5,000 selling pictures of one polished foot. I don't believe it. I think she was having us on. I also don't think she's got a cousin called Sven, but it was very entertaining for about 2 minutes, so we'll go with it. 0344 499 1000. James is on the line. Hey, James.
Hi, Catherine. How are you doing?
All right. What's going on?
Yeah, good. I just wanted to weigh in a bit on this Dominic Cummings situation.
Go on.
I just feel really ashamed of the way the media have acted and the way people have jumped on him. I think that it's unprecedented times, like they keep saying, and it's crazy, and the politicians are doing what they can, and I think we're just jumping on any little thing. And if what he said, the whole event was true, then actually he's not done anything wrong, and he was trying to manage, and it's a unique situation for everyone, and I think we should be supporting people. And I mean, he's just another, he's a father, he's got a job, he's, do you know what I mean? And instead, as a media and as a public, we're just wanting to stone people out of maybe frustration. I don't know what it is, but I think it's awful. I really feel ashamed of
That's one way of looking at it, James. But the other way of looking at it is he's one of the most powerful people in the country. He's not subject to the same sort of pressure that many are. I do not believe for a second that his employer wouldn't help him with childcare if he's as essential as he obviously is. And if your other half phoned you at work and you to the point where you ran home to help her out, at the time of a national crisis, which was a virus, right?
Yeah.
Would you go back to work within 2 hours, knowing that you've been around someone who was ill?
Yeah, good point.
That from that moment on, I thought, hang on a minute, this is not what the average Joe would do. So the average Joe defence, the bloke doing his best for his family, I don't know, it fell apart from that moment on for me. The other thing about testing your eyesight by putting your family in the car and driving for half an hour... Really?
Yeah, well, when I thought of that, I can imagine the scenario. They've been sat there and they thought, oh, will you be all right driving? Well, let's just go down the road, have a little walk and that, drive back and see how I feel.
You know his wife can drive.
Right. Well, when I was watching the interview online, I was watching it thinking, assuming that his wife can't drive, that's why...
She wrote an article about how much he drives. There are big holes in the story, right? And if it was just, you know, here's the thing, right? If we were talking about a bloke who lived on an estate deciding that he was going to go home and stay at his mum and dad's hundreds of miles away and go out while he was there and drive about, and do you think he would be given so much leeway?
I don't know, it'd be a different headline, wouldn't it? Rather than talking about the...
It'd be a COVIDiot. It'd be called a COVIDiot.
Yeah, they'll be making council estate sort of joke, I guess.
Exactly.
I just think, I saw a picture of him. I've heard his name batted about, but I've never really come across him in his politics, what have you. But then, when I've seen the pictures in the paper, it's always scowling looks or really bad cutaways. And just watching the interview from start to finish today, he seems quite, like, genuine. He don't think he's done out wrong. And you know what? Fair play, he could bow under pressure and just apologise when he don't really mean it. But actually, he's got a bit of integrity, because if that's what he believes, he's sticking to it. And he seemed genuine. But then I looked online after the interview, and the cutaway pictures they've used for the articles and stuff are all little moments where he has done a little scowl or he's done a little... I'm thinking, we just wanted to jump on him and portray him in a certain way. I don't know the guy personally, but I think he's like the rest of us. He's just trying to do the best he can.
He's not like me, mate. He's not like me. I can't justify driving 270 miles. I haven't been round the corner in my car unless I had a proper important thing to do. I don't understand it. I don't understand why he had to go at midnight. I don't understand why he didn't come clean sooner. I don't understand why he was half an hour late for a really important moment. I don't understand why he went back to work after 2 hours when his wife couldn't manage and thought she was going to pass out and had been throwing up. I don't understand it. I don't understand it. So, no,
well,
he's not like me.
We know why he's not come clean, because during the height of pandemic, when you're telling people to stay at home, you can't come out and say, actually, the guy that told me to tell you all to stay at home has actually been going out. So they've obviously...
And why can't you do that?
Yeah, well, to avoid the topic of explaining it all, because like it has now, I think it's just been blown out of proportion, misunderstood, and I feel like people have jumped on him, and that was going to happen either way. We had other stuff to concentrate on, and we can't imagine some of the jobs and responsibilities these guys do, and like day in, day out. Yeah, I just think we're giving a hard time.
He's very important, man.
Yeah.
Is he more important than you?
No, we're all equal in value, but some people have more responsibility, obviously, don't they?
I think we've all got responsibility at the moment, haven't we?
Yeah.
Have you been out?
I've been doing my essential shops. To be honest, when I've gone down to local shops, there's been the odd time where I forgot to get a few bits and I've had to go back again. But if the atmosphere outside is very relaxed now. I feel like people do feel we're at the end of it, or there's less danger in some sense. Most people have either isolated or had it. It just feels like it's on its way out now.
It feels that way, but
who knows?
But you know why the numbers are going down? Because no one's going anywhere.
Yeah. Well, I do have a question about it. I think if these viruses were contagious for a certain amount of time and we all isolate for 14 days and then we're okay to be around people, well, surely everyone's just done a two-month isolation, so shouldn't the virus no longer be contagious? I don't understand that.
But not everyone has.
But how is the virus still living on? Is it living on in a contagious... Joey, how, I don't understand.
Yeah. Well, this is it.
If everyone stayed away and everyone's at home and no one spread it, then it just disappears, surely. I don't know how it...
But some people aren't staying at home. Some people are moving about.
Yeah, right, Mr. Cummings.
Well, you know, and there's, and not just him. And some people are moving about for legitimate reasons. You know, you've got people, medical staff having to go into work and put themselves at risk because there's not enough protective equipment. All that stuff's been going on.
Yeah.
And also you've got people who are living in very confined spaces. You've got people who are not able to self-isolate away from everybody else as easily as others. You know, it's complicated. It's really complicated. And I just don't feel like we're ready to start freestyling yet.
Yeah. I can see the side of the fence wrong with Dominic Cummings, but do you not feel at all that the media and the public have been a bit unfair or a bit overly harsh or critical?
I can honestly say to you that I'm not trying to pick holes in him for the sake of picking holes in him, but I'm trying to understand some of his reasoning and why he thinks that it's perfectly okay to have done some of the things he's done. And, you know, the going back to work after 2 hours when you've got a wife who's throwing up and thought she was going to pass out, I don't get. The feeling like you're coming down with something and moving 270 miles when we were told we mustn't do that because we're potentially taking, you know, overloading the NHS in another area. Mm. I don't get it. I don't get it. And I don't understand why he wanted to test his eyesight by driving for half an hour when, by his wife's admission, she was better before he was. So why didn't she drive?
So what's your ideal scenario now to happen? Would you want him to be sacked and just say, look, I was wrong, I'm sorry? Or do you not respect that he's sticking by what he believes?
No. No, I think he's been caught out. I feel like, do you know what I feel like? And this is a really kind of rough way of saying it, but you know when someone, that expression, so don't pee on me and tell me it's raining. I feel like he's peed on me. He's telling me it's raining, but I can see him doing his flies up. That's what I feel like. Anyway, picture. Good to speak to you, James. 0344 499 1000. Hello, Dan.
Hi there.
Hello.
Let me just take your seat, then.
Oh.
Hi there. Hi, good evening to you. How are you doing?
Good evening. I'm not as out of breath as you are. I hope you're all right.
Yeah. So, listen to the radio. It's made me say, oh, God, I tuned into LBC. With all the goings on about Cummings and all that.
Mm.
Anyway, I've got three things I want to tell you. They're all pretty quick, I guess.
Could you put your face a bit closer to the microphone because you sound really muffled?
But they may be a bit more lighthearted. Is that any better?
Yeah, great.
I'll try and calm down because I've just jumped into the truck.
Oh,
dear. My birthday was coming up. I mentioned it a few days ago. And before my birthday, my wife had got me something but was asking me to guess what it was.
Oh, God, that's a dangerous game, isn't it?
So just off the cuff, I said, sex doll. And then she said, maybe later.
Good one.
She misunderstood what I was saying.
Right.
And she did not feel embarrassed after that. The second one is, have you got good singing, a good singing voice?
Oh, I can hold a tune. Why?
I wouldn't say I'm particularly good, but it's not for the thrill of trying. Recently I've been looking for Oasis karaoke, because I really fancy having a go at that. But it's really hard to find anything like that.
Oasis karaoke? Really?
Well, you get discs with Oasis on and some others, because it's really hard to find dedicated Oasis.
Okay. You can download it, though, can't you? I think if you were to go on, I don't know, something like iTunes, you'd probably be able to find something.
I'll keep searching. And the third one, the third thing I want to tell you about is a new thing I'm planning. Recently, I've come up with the idea of, for my father, to do a Desert Island Discs.
Right, yeah, so sounds good. Are you going to record him?
Just the radio, yeah.
Good.
And so I've asked him to select, I didn't realise how many I needed, but I've given him and said, choose 10 songs throughout your life and break them up into stories around your life and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
And what I'm going to do, set it up with two video cameras and lighting. I've ordered radio mics, so we can have radio mics attached.
Oh, blimey, you're not playing games, are you?
I've also got some system that allows you to record each voice and video on separate lines, so I can then edit it properly.
Oh.
Well, when I say properly, I've never done this before, so it's really a learning curve for me.
Do you not think you're making it a bit complicated for yourself?
Well, I realise if I just record it with a videotape at a distance, etc., going to be very hard to record the voices properly, etc. And so it'd be better to do it on mics. And also, when I record this, what I can do is get the actual record or track downloaded, and rather than hear it played on the video at a distance, I can play it directly on the track onto the video that I'm making, if you like.
Okay.
So it won't have that distant effect. But also, while the track's being played, and because this is a video, not a radio thing, I can play photographs of him throughout his life during the songs. And when this is completed, he'll be able to share this with all his family.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds incredible if you can manage it, but I think it's it sounds like a rather lavish production for a first go.
Well, the way I see it, nothing ventured, nothing gained.
No, you're right.
You know, I think that on the radio I was hearing a thing about how lots of people may have started house repairs and not finished them. But then again, it's better to have been in love than not been in love at all.
Yeah, but I would rather someone didn't start building me a bathroom and then bugger off. So swings and roundabouts. having had that very thing happen recently, this whole idea of starting something and not finishing it being the best case scenario isn't necessarily so, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's fair enough. But so, I mean...
No, but it sounds good, and it's good to have dreams.
I imagine the best place to put it, once it is completed, because it'll take a bit of editing, will be to stick it on YouTube.
Yeah, possibly.
Because then anyone he knows, he can point them to that YouTube and then they can see it. Plus, I also thought, he's getting on now, and should the point happen when he passes on, this would be a great library bit of information about him to pass on.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Do you not... Well, okay, no, I'm not going to say, because I think you've got vision and you've got determination, and I don't want to... No, if that's what you want to do, good, good.
But I realised in the whole process of it is going to take a couple of months.
It's going to take ages.
To nail it down.
My suggestion, just record a conversation with him to start with. Just so that if the lavish thing doesn't come off, you've always got that footage there.
Yeah, plenty of stuff like that. Okay, thanks very much for listening. I'll leave you back to your LBC conversations. Of pure determination and politics.
Okay, thanks very much. Take care. 03444991000. Should we take a little break? I think we should.
Late Night with Catherine Boyle on Talk Radio.
03444991000. Robin, hey Robin.
Hi Cass, are you alright?
Yeah, fine Tal, what's going on with you?
Just a chat about, I had a quarrel with my dad earlier. Oh. I just am feeling very, very well, and I had, I don't know, I have no one to talk to, it's just like calling to have a chat. It's alright, sorry. it was because my dad has been asking me if I would like to go back to China after graduation. It's understandable, but when I told him that I would like to try to maybe find a job or set CV somewhere in the UK first and then see if I can go back to China later in December or maybe next year early, he said he doesn't think I could find a job anywhere. What he said is to me is that he doesn't think I could find a job in the UK. He doesn't think I can find my favorite types of job or any jobs that's within media or something like that in China as well. He just felt like I'm wasting my time in the UK.
So why on earth would he educate you up to this level and send you off to learn abroad if he thinks you're a no-hoper?
I don't know, but it's quite interesting, isn't it? He does not support me going abroad to study at the very beginning of everything. My mom supported me a lot. He just felt like I should spend more time in China studying and then see if I can go out maybe somewhere across the world, do a PhD.
Right.
But my feeling is he just having a fear of losing me somewhere. Yeah. I'm the only child in the family, which is understandable. I think it's understandable at all.
That's what it sounds like to me. It sounds like someone desperately trying to hold on to you. But unfortunately, the way he's doing it isn't very kind.
I totally agree with you. Because I think for a long time, I'm not as close. I will just say it publicly because I think I'm not as close as to my mom, as to my dad. Sorry, it just doesn't make sense in English. Because I'm not very close to my dad. I'm very close to my mom because when I was very young, my mom gave up job and working, gave up working at all. Let just stay at home taking care of me for 18 years until I went to the undergraduate. So we spent almost every day together apart from school time. So it's really close. My dad works across the country, so he seldom comes back home.
I think I know what this is then, if that's the case. It's him feeling like he is losing control of the situation. Already, I would imagine that if he was working away a lot and you had this set up with your mum where you were very close and it was your home, and when he came back, he was kind of almost interrupting the natural flow of the way the house was running. And so he would have to make his presence felt. And he's kind of doing this again in a really clumsy way. He's trying to guide your life. But the thing is, you've got used to sorting yourself out.
I'm pretty much against his plan from the very beginning. He came back home when I was 16, around that time. And then he started to get into my life. But he had little idea about... I'm just going to put literally who I am and what do I like and what kind of stuff I would like to do. Like, I'm a huge fan of language when I was in secondary school and undergraduate. He just felt like boys should learn science, and he tried his best to force me to study science subjects in the undergraduate, but I finally chose to learn a language, learn English as my major. He wasn't happy about that. I spent 4 years learning languages, and then he said I should do translation rather than, you know, media. But I felt like I want to use my language skills to do something else. I love media as well, so I just say I want to do media in the UK. And he wasn't happy about that.
Well, when it comes down to it, Robin, it's your life, and you're already started working on chasing a dream that you have, and you can't live it for someone else. You can't. And I don't know.
But I find it, there, isn't it, Kaz? I mean, sometimes, and I totally get the point of my dad could feel like losing me because I'm like too far away from him. But I mean, so whenever he talked to me, asked me, when are you coming back home? I would say, no, I'm not going back home anytime soon because I want to find a job. But after the phone call, I feel sad. I really feel sad because I know he misses me. It's not about controlling that much. I mean, he wants to control my life somehow. I mean, but after all, I mean, he misses me a lot, Kat.
Yeah, he wants to have an influence in your life, and unfortunately, the way he expresses it is clumsy at best, clumsy, and not very sensitive. But you can't be responsible. You can't live his dream. And if there is something you want to do, then that's, you know, you're living your own life. You can't live for someone else. And it's sad if he can't see that what you're doing makes you happy. And it's sad if he can't see that you're doing something that you're actually really good at.
I'm still trying. I mean, I'm still trying to do what I would like to do. It's hard. I mean, at least I'm still trying to do something I think is right for me at the moment. But it's just the pressure from family and all this kind of argument. I think it's not unnecessary, but it's just like, it's like extra pressure on me when everything's quite difficult at the moment.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. And I empathise more than you realise, because I think for a long time I had to justify my kind of career path. Because I'm going to be honest, to my dad, I wasn't doing what he thought I should be doing. My dad thought I should have gone to Cambridge. I didn't get into Cambridge. My dad, you know, for various reasons. But he thought that when I became a journalist, I would end up being some sort of foreign correspondent and I would use my languages more. And he certainly didn't foresee a time when I would be, for a long time, working at a local radio station doing, I did a gardening phone in, I did all this stuff. He didn't understand that actually I flipping loved it. And there was something in it that made me want to carry on doing it. Okay. And it wasn't about, being, I don't know, doing something that he thought was a respectable job, you know, and I mean that in the purest sense, that people would go, my God, his daughter's done really well. And then, you know, I'm doing a job sometimes that means I go and mess about with Ian on a weekend and we make people laugh. Is making people laugh what I'm trained to do? No. But you know what? I'm good at it. And so it's a proper job and I'm making a success of it. And I think it's only recently with, you know, us winning ARIA awards and stuff and being written about in The Observer by people he respects and recognises from the telly and all that stuff, he's kind of realised that this isn't a distraction what I'm doing now. This is what I'm supposed to be doing.
I think that's fab. I mean, I'm certainly enjoying the weekend show, by the way.
Oh, thank you. So, I've had to really dig my heels in sometimes and say, no, this is a proper job. And if you can't see it, then that's sad. But I'm going to carry on doing this and I'm not going to feel like I've let myself down by doing this. And you kind of need to get to that point too. But I understand how difficult it is when actually I think for a lot of people, your instinct is to try and please your parents.
I can't. I'm trying to, but this is not really, because I think my mom understands why I'm trying to do something, but for my dad, he exactly like what you're saying. He wants me to do some job which looks better, maybe teachers, maybe doctors. They think his mind, which is a good job to do, and journalism is just not as good as expected. But I don't know. I'm still trying to do my thing. I'm just trying to find a way to balance the conversation when I have a phone call with him. I don't want to argue with him. I really don't want to hurt his feeling, but just like, I need to practice my way of speaking, maybe try to make him feel better.
It's difficult. It's really difficult because it's not just that you're trying to convince an older person that what you're doing is valid. It's you're trying to convince the person whose judgment, not judgment, approval you would really like. We all really want our parents to say that they're proud of what we do. And that they're glad that we're doing what we're doing. And if they don't get it, it can hurt. But you know what you need to do. And you can't, when it comes down to it, we can't live for other people.
That's true. I agree with you. Thank you, Kat.
Hang in there. Hang in there. He'll either get it or he won't. But you can't change your life to please him. You can't.
Sure.
Take care, Robin. 0344 499 1000. We better take a break. I'll be back after the news. But we've got Brian, we've got Paul, we've got Jane, and I've always got room for you. 0344 499 1000. You're listening to Talk Radio.
Late Night with Catherine Boyle on Talk Radio.
Thank you.
Staves, I'm on fire after midnight. Gosh, those harmonies, eh? 0344 499 1000. Let's have a quick word with Brian in Tyne and Wear. Hey, Brian.
Hiya, Catherine. Great show.
Thanks for hanging on. I know it's been a while. What did you want to say?
Well, you know, I've got a few things to mention, but my first point is this. The whole situation right now just makes the whole lockdown thing look ridiculous. And I really, you know, if he had been a woman, he would have been done, right?
That's the last thing.
Yeah, it would have been, you know, the Theresa May type of character should have a pressure put on her to, like, stand down.
Well, the really difference is with Theresa May, she's elected, so maybe she's more accountable. Yeah. He's a staff member.
I suppose you're right. But I also think that poor woman, Catherine Calderwood, the health minister for Scotland, should be reinstated. She didn't have the virus. Yeah, she went to her home. On two occasions, but she didn't have the virus. He did have the virus. I think it's not fair that she was told to, like, you know, fall on her sword. So she should be given that job back right now. She should be reinstated. And anybody else out there who's been pulled to one side by the police and fined in their cars, they should be given the money back. Because why should he get away with this when everybody else has to, you know, abide by the rules and regulations?
So his reasons don't wash with you then, Brian?
Absolutely not, but I can't understand this. Can you? Because I don't know this bit. I don't understand. His wife had the virus. He was coming on with the virus, and his son was in the car.
Yeah.
Who was going to be looking after his son? Was it his family?
Well, from what I can understand, from the reasons we've been given, the idea was he would stay in this sort of cottage on his parents' land, where he's got a family member with teenage and early 20-something nieces who live on the land as well, in a different house. And the idea was, if The couple got so ill they couldn't look after the boy. The teenage and early 20s nieces would look after him because they're at a lower risk age group. But as it turned out, no one needed to go in there. No one needed to intervene. And all the sister did was bring him food and leave it at the front door.
Right. The thing is, if we're being told that our children aren't carriers of the virus. So that children can't get the virus, but they can be carriers. His child could have therefore spread the virus onto their other relatives. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, look at me. I've got a youngster, right, who's like 11. I haven't seen him since before St. Patrick's Day because his mum's got, like, you know, a few issues and stuff, and I don't want to take chances to go up there and see him. I've gone, you know, spoke to him on the phone and that, but I've not been up there to see my son. I haven't seen him since before St. Patrick's Day, and I don't want, you know, I haven't got the virus, thank God, but I still, you know, I've abided by the rules and regulations, and the point I'm trying to make is... I just think it, because he's up there and he's like an authority, well, kind of, he's the chief kind of like advisor, let's be honest, he's the chief advisor of Boris Johnson. Without him, Boris would be in a right mess because I've not seen much of Boris. But, you know, it's just a whole, it's a complete joke now. I think anybody now gets pulled over by the police will say, well, why don't you go and find Dominic? Is it Dominic? Yeah, Dominic Cummins. You know,
yeah.
I just think it's crazy, but. Here's a couple of things I don't understand, right, about this virus. God, I'm a bit nervous here. Right, the thing is, right, so far, how many people have died this year of influenza? Nobody, because anyone who's got flu and have died have put it down to the coronavirus.
Oh, I don't know whether that's true.
Well, I couldn't find any stats for anybody who's died of the normal flu or COPD. I heard somewhere up here that a woman's relative had died of COPD and she was advised to put it down as COVID-19 because she would get a quicker burial, because obviously there's a big list, like a waiting list for people to get buried in that. And this other guy on the TV, who's an expert on viruses, said that everybody who's ever had flu, like a serious influenza over the years, would still accumulate a bit of the coronavirus in the bodies. It didn't get flushed out completely. So if I went for a test, even if I've got the virus, it might even show up as being positive if I've had flu, do you know what I mean? There's a lot of questions unanswered about this virus. I mean, I just don't know. It's really
confusing. I'm not sure that's right, mm-hmm. But let's see. Annual flu reports. Public Health England publishes overviews each year of influenza surveillance results from the winter period. That you can get a flu, you can get the stats online, and they're not interchangeable.
That people have died from it as well. Because everybody seems to be like, when people die from this, from anything now, it's always put down on the death certificate as COVID-19 or whatever.
That sounds like a bit of a generalisation, but I know what you mean.
Yeah.
It's my granddad died of various things, but the cause of death was pneumonia. Now, you know, a lot of older people get, you know, die of pneumonia, but there are underlying things that go along with it. I know what you mean about it. I've noticed that there's a shift in talking about people dying of COVID and dying with COVID. You know, it's doesn't make it any better, though, does it?
No, absolutely not. I mean, I haven't got a car, I don't drive it, but I do use public transport from time to time. And I was just thinking, imagine somebody had the COVID virus, right, and was sitting on a chair in the bus, and that person, you know, like the fluffy chair, and that person got off the chair, and I went on the bus and sat in that seat. Would I catch the virus off that seat, even though it's not plastic, or even though it's like material?
It's more talking about them, I don't know, coughing into their hand and putting their hand on the handrail, and then you touching it and putting it near your face. That's probably more dangerous, as far as what they're telling us now is, but it's so kind of, I don't think you can go up through your bum, through a chair and through trousers, but it's more about the surfaces that you touch in the immediate... Right. But again, I'm talking about what I've been told, and they're finding new things out all the time. This thing about it affecting your eyesight is new. They've only just accepted that there is a connection between a loss of sense of taste and smell and the virus. So who knows? Mm-hmm. But I'd be very surprised if it could, you know, I don't think it's necessarily about sitting in the same seat. I think it's more, like I say, pulling yourself up using the handrail.
Right. And another thing just before I go, right? we keep on hearing on the news about people, they're testing these people out, they're testing them people out. But you're a common person like yourself. I'm not saying you're common because you're not.
But oh, I'm common as Mark. Go on.
Right. We can't even go and get a test. So, I mean, really, we just can't because we're not health professionals or we're not working in the medical field. And we keep on hearing they're testing so many hundreds of thousands of people per day. Yeah. How on earth am I ever going to know if I've had the virus or not, if I'm not going to ever get a test? You know, one of those like, antibody tests, we just don't know, do we? When I'm in the shops as well, you know, in the supermarket, people are tapping on, because I'm very tall and that, right? People are tapping on my shoulder, can you pass me that down from the top shelf? I think, don't touch me, for crying out loud, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you're not supposed to be near enough to be able to touch unless you missed a tickle.
No, but people do creep up on you. Has that happened to you before, Catherine, when you've been in the supermarket, somebody creeps up on you and you've like, spun round?
No, because with the times I've been in the supermarket, it's swerved everyone. It's awful. It's awful.
Yeah. It's really difficult, though, because when you're in the queue and all you're paying for your groceries, the till people are, like, creeping up behind you all the time. I mean, it's really, really difficult. But I'll be honest with you, I don't know anyone, right? I don't know anyone, and many of my friends don't know anyone who's had this virus. I know it's very, very few people in the whole population have got it. But one more thing before I go, right? Even if we get this virus under control here, you know, I mean, it's a global thing. It's all over the thing. I forgot her name. Sorry, the lady who answered the calls.
Oh yeah, Hayley.
Hayley, yeah, I was saying to Hayley before. Even if we get under control in Britain, the virus is still present in Brazil, Argentina, you know, America, and if we start like slackening off with, traveling on planes and what have you, when people are coming here to visit, they could be reinfecting people again and it could start all over again.
They're talking about quarantining people now, so if you come over for a 2-week holiday, you spend it in a hotel room. I mean, it's not going to happen, is it?
In the very beginning, shouldn't it? You know, when it first kicked off back in January, they should have done that at the very beginning.
It would have made sense to me, Brian, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Thanks for phoning. 0344 499 1000 if you want to give me a ring. Let's have a word with Jane. Hey, Jane.
Hi. Hello. I am a Brit, but I live in Spain.
Okay.
I cannot believe the difference between England and Spain. We have a schedule. We are regionalized. If they think our numbers are not good enough, they don't upgrade us to the next benefit, to put it. If we can't go to a coffee shop, okay?
Yeah.
Other regions can go to the shopping mall.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot believe, let's come back now. And, okay, when I go into a supermarket or anybody, they insist we take the receipt. Normally, I don't bother because it's on the internet. They insist we take the receipt in case the police stop us and want to know that our purchases were made that day, and they check it.
I see.
I'm not saying England is any better or worse or Spain. I'm pointing out the differences. If I'm not wearing a mask and the police stop me, I can be fined.
Yeah. I wonder whether that has to do with the fact that Spanish people and French people, and for most of the continent, are used to carrying identity cards which can be asked for at any point by a policeman and you have to present it. And so they're used to being asked to account for themselves.
An identity card, with all due respect, is a... I have my medical card, which is a printed card, like an ID card. They don't ask for that. They want the receipt from the store.
No, but what I mean is that people are more... What I mean is, Jane, that people are more used to being asked to present justifications or identification papers for who they are and where they are.
You're making, but the police want to know you haven't been somewhere else and you've actually been to that supermarket that within that hour.
I totally understand that.
Yeah. Masks, we have to wear a mask. If we don't, we are fined.
Mm.
this coming thing, oh boy, it is a complete disgrace. If I was the head of police, which I'm certainly not, I would have him in for an eye test. Should he be driving?
Well, I think we all know that it's probably not the best way to go, is it?
Well, I mean, you know, what a way to behave. But what I find staggering tonight, and it was obviously cooked up by Al Johnson, which is his correct name, Alexander, by Johnson and Cummings today, was to open up the retail shops within by the 15th of June as a sweetener to the public in England who are going mad over the Cummings thing. And don't kid yourself, but it's only in England people are going mad. You can't believe the number of Spanish people who are commenting about it to me.
Mm.
And it's not just to me. It's become an international topic of conversation.
Across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker, the best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio. Late night, Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Let's try Anthony again. Good evening, Anthony.
Good evening, how are you?
I'm very well, Anthony. What have you got for us tonight?
I'm glad you came in now. You lied to me and you told me a porcupine, you did.
I didn't tell you a porcupine. What are you talking about?
You said Barry died.
Oh, that was a recording of Barry we just played then. That was a classic. We're calling that feature classic Barry.
No.
No. I thought he had died. I'm not convinced that's the real Barry, but if it is, he's speaking from beyond the grave. Don't you, you shouldn't be angry with me. You should be pleased. You should be pleased that Barry has risen from the dead.
Good old guy, Barry.
There you go.
What he's in, obviously the crime part is not, you know, all that good, people dying that.
It's not all that good at all, mate. It's pretty loud.
What he's in, I'm feeling a bit low, and his point is, you know, because I'm still missing my partner who I've been for 5 years, and still struggling to get through this you know, this time, because I miss her during the day when she's here, and all the memories will, and it's hard to take in him, you know. I don't know how to go with the flow kind of thing,
You just got to keep putting one foot in front of the other, and you guys got to keep getting through day by day. It gets better. It will get better.
It
will. You know, it's a cliche. Time is a great healer. It actually is. You'll never forget her. She will always be a part of your life. Well, then that's great, and that's a real gift. But it will. It's like when someone dies, right? You think, oh my god, when someone close to you dies, my god, I'm never gonna forget them. I'm gonna live my life better. I'm gonna cherish every second. And you might do that for a few weeks. You might do it for a few months, but eventually that fades and the pain goes. You never forget them, but the pain goes, and then you'll go a whole day without thinking about them, and you go, oh, I didn't think. And then it'll be a week, and then you might think about them a lot, and it gets easier. Is what I'm trying to say to you. Is what I would say if I were talking to my boys. It gets easier.
I understand. You know, I like your cats, bro. I've seen your cats on YouTube. How many cats have you got? Four or five?
I got four cats, but it's not mine I'm worried about at the moment. It's Catherine's, because it looks like Willow's sticking her tongue out at you, Kath, and having a hissy fit.
She was not very happy.
You just woke her up.
Boys to Men woke her up, yeah, but I'm tickling her ears now.
There is nothing cuter than a cat's tongue. A cat sticking its tongue out is just the best thing. And sometimes if a cat's had a good old lick, they'll forget to put the tongue away and there'll just be a little bit of tongue sticking out. And it's the best. They forget to put their tongue away, the idiots. And it just sticks out. And if you've got the dark cat and this, you know, pink thing sticking out, wonderful. Love it. My cats are great. I love them. They're a joy. They're a pain in the bum. And I would not have it any other way, Anthony. They are the gift that keeps on giving.
I'm actually allergic to cats, by the way.
Well, in that case, I'm going to have to cancel the invitation to my house. Anthony, nice to talk to you, my friend. Take care. It will get better, I promise. Let's go to Steve.
Late Night with Kathryn Boyle on Talk Radio.
Let's not go to Steve. Let's go to Rob instead. He's been hanging on for a while. Hello, Rob.
Yeah, you, Kath. You okay?
Yeah, not too bad at all. Oh, it's that Rob. Here we go.
Hey, I call it serious when you're on.
Oh, well, let's enjoy this experience then. Get serious with me, Rob.
Right, so I feel a bit sorry for Dominic Cummings.
Go on.
Because he's blamed for a lot of the Brexit stuff, and he's kind of seen as one of the, like, main sort of people that created the momentum and the surge.
The architects.
Yeah, a lot of my friends who, like, literally vitriol towards him. And I'm just thinking, there was a theory, and this is my kind of thinking. Everyone knows where he lives, and we didn't know what was going to happen when lockdown happened. And there was pockets of unrest, you know. Yeah. We had the issues in, I remember being working for a retailer in Woolwich, one of our stores burnt down, you know. And I just think, yeah, I can understand potentially maybe why he went. Going back to work 2 hours after direct exposure, that was absolutely nuts.
Yeah.
But I can kind of understand why you... Sorry, go on, yeah.
No, that's the bit where I went, oh, God, well, I really... I feared the worst, but I hoped that I would hear a reason. I hoped that I would hear a reason. If he'd have said, I was worried for my family's safety, and I did this, and I see that it looks terrible, but this is the situation I was in, I would be more inclined, perhaps, to believe him. But yeah, it just seemed like a really elaborate... You know when someone tells a fib and they go into a lot of extra detail? And in between the... And so I went back to work because my wife said I should go back because I'm really important. And from that moment on, I went, well, hang on a minute. Wait. He went back, not the next day, but within a couple of hours. Can you not work from home?
Yeah.
For a day. And also, why is that different from us? If anyone even so much as, you know, coughs, we're all looking at each other in this house. I certainly wouldn't rush home from work. You know, if it's something that bad that I'd have to rush home from work to look after my kids and then go, I just don't get that bit. I don't get the, I had to test my eyesight out by driving bit. I don't get why he went at midnight unless he was trying to get away without being seen. In which case it just smells fishy.
Well, that's what I thought. I thought the reason he probably went at midnight was because he didn't want to be seen. And I can kind of understand that because the newspapers are like, where's he gone? Because,
yeah,
you know, every celebrity is under a microscope. Any photo, where are they, you know? But the thing was about the eyesight. And again, maybe, I don't know, I'm just playing about this, but I said today, I was like, well, we've all done that thing where if you feel a bit poorly when you drive, you go, well, I'll tell you what, I'll try, you know, I'll go a couple of miles. And if I'm okay, I'm okay. But, and I'm wondering if that's just his way of expressing that. I don't know, but it's just...
But the other thing is that his wife can drive. And by his own admission, she got better before he did. So,
okay, so I missed
why
that
is
bit.
He testing it out?
Fair play. He's...
So no, I don't want it to be black and white. I really don't. Yeah. I want to understand why someone did something that looks bloody awful when you know that the knives are out for you. I mean, it's his job to know about what looks good, and how it will have an impact on the government's message. And I think when the advisor becomes the news, you're in trouble. You know, the whole point is that he's not supposed to be the sideshow. And this is awful. I've never known anything like it. And then for Boris Johnson to go to in front of the press and say, well, you've had a word with him. That's the end of that, as far as I'm concerned. It just doesn't sound right. It doesn't sound right.
Do you think he'll go? I don't get it.
He doesn't want to. I don't think he'll go of his own volition.
I really don't think he thinks
he's done anything wrong. Here's another thing I don't understand, Rob Benet. So your kid needs a wee on the way back from somewhere.
Yeah.
So you go into the woods. What? And then he's playing where he's peed. I don't, because he had a wee and then they played a bit in the woods. And also, here's another thing. Isn't it very unlucky that the two times, the only two times apparently, that he went out into a remote area, he was seen?
Yeah. I think he is recognisable.
Yeah.
He does.
Yeah.
He's very distinct. It's like a bit like Boris Johnson in his hair. You go, oh, that's Boris Johnson. You know, because he is very distinctive. And I don't know. I just feel at this time there's just so much vitriol against him. People know where he lives. And I just think it's mental that, I mean, I don't know if you saw the Facebook clip. Sorry, there's other social media available. But he's walking into his house and there's like just people just ranting and raving at him. I just think somebody is going to do something. And that's what I worry about.
I agree with that, and I think that some of the things that have been done outside his front door, I can see why people feel, I think because of his persona and the fact that he comes across as gruff and unflappable.
Yeah.
Some people feel justified in maybe going in harder than they would generally, you know, the big screen, etc. I mean, there's no, it doesn't make anyone look good, that sort of behaviour.
No.
But I think it's just the refusal and the kind of dogged insistence that he did nothing wrong. And the defence seems to be, I don't feel like I did anything wrong. Well, that doesn't mean you didn't do anything wrong. And for me, it's not anything to do with Brexit or anything like that. I'm not that cut and dry about politics. I'm really not. It's just that whole thing of what feels unfair, what feels like a double standard. And also, the idea that someone is trying to pull the wool over my eyes, tell me that something's not happening that's obviously happening. I don't like that. I don't like that.
Yeah.
But the personal stuff, I completely get why it's out of order. But don't tell me lies. Don't tell me things that don't seem true. Tell me the whole truth or don't bother. I don't want to sit and listen to half an hour of waffle. Just not right.
Okay. At the very least, Barnyard Castle Tourists Department are going to do well out of this. Because everyone's been Googling it. It
does look quite nice.
There'll be one winner out of this anyway. So.
It does look quite nice. But there's another thing. We weren't supposed to be sitting about on benches at that point. And you find its own admission, they went and sat by the river. I mean, but he didn't think he was doing anything wrong. Apparently, that's the end of it. God,
that's
if only
it
was true for everybody. Well, no, I'm glad it's not true for everybody. I'm glad it isn't. For most people, it's been very cut and dry. And for me, if I'm erring on the side of caution and staying in more than I should, then that's better than the opposite, which is putting people at risk, potentially. I'm not doing it. Anyway, it's nice to speak to you.
No worries. Take care. All the best. Bye-bye.
Bye, Rob. Nice to speak to you. 0344 499 1000. Let's talk to Stuart. Hello, Stuart.
Hi. I'm from up near, originally I was born up near Barnard Castle, a place called Middleton in Teesdale.
Right.
I've been a bit baffled of how he's accidentally got to the river without going through the middle of Barnard Castle. He can only come in from a couple of directions, because you can't go in from the west side. It's all enclosed in valleys, and the north side's, you've got to go through Barnard Castle itself to get to the river. So you can only come in from the southwest side, and then you would end up like somewhere like Walton, which is nowhere near Barnard Castle. So it can't be accidentally, but he'd go through the middle of Barnard Castle down into the Deans to get to the river. So I think he's waffled on a bit there, like.
How do you feel? I mean, how built? I don't know how built up it is. Is it the sort of place where you could go and be distant from people? I mean, I'm guessing most people are staying away from the centre of town at the moment.
Well, you can't be distant from people in Barnard Castle. He must have been well outside Barnard Castle. And I'm only guessing that he must have come from the Yorkshire side to be able to get to the river near Barnard Castle.
Right.
But it's quite an enclosed place, Barnard. That's why they built the castle there, because it was almost impossible to conquer. You know, you had the river going round it and the hills on each side. So, but that wasn't the main reason I phoned up. It's just something I was baffled about by him. One of the main reasons I phoned up was I'm getting very tired now about people going on about it. There's thousands and thousands of men and women's hours gone into this when they could have been doing something else in the community, you know.
Like what?
Well, people could have been helping other people, you know, and not gathering in groups of a dozen, pushing shoulder to shoulder like pigs, like reporters outside his house, who were clearly disrespecting the laws on isolation and social distance and, you know, I mean...
Well, they're only guidelines, as we keep being told, and also, if you can work from home, you should, but obviously they can't in that instance. Some of them were wearing masks, you're right. It's all very sketchy.
Yeah, so...
Apparently you just use your common sense now.
Exactly, that's what Boris's latest thing was, isn't it? Like, use your common sense.
Yeah.
But I was really shocked to see, upwards of a dozen reporters, and not many of them had a face mask on, but I don't think there was only a couple out of the whole lot of them, pushing and shoving. They weren't keeping 2 metres from the man who was trying to get to his car. They were getting right into his face, and I think that we should drop the whole thing about that man until the police arrest those reporters.
Right.
And then we can have him sacked. But unless the police act on them, who are clearly going around the country doing this, not just in one place, tomorrow they'll be doing it somewhere else, shoulder to shoulder.
How is that the case that they're clearly doing that?
Well,
that's an assumption.
I've seen my own eyes on the TV several times, and they'll be going somewhere
else. And it's the same person, is it, up and down the country?
Pardon?
I think that's a generalisation.
Well, of course.
I also think it's dangerous calling people doing their jobs pigs. Because you would only know about this. You only know about this because someone found out by doing their job.
But does their job is part of their job being close within 2 metres of each other?
Well, I mean, you have to socially distance if possible, according to the government's guidelines.
Uh-huh.
They might argue that it wasn't possible.
Right.
You know, I don't think it was particularly edifying behaviour.
So why can't we apply that generalisation to this man?
Which man?
Wait, we've talked about on there. I can't even remember his name now.
Dominic Cummings?
Yeah. Why can't we apply that to him? I mean, He wasn't doing his job.
He disappeared taking someone with symptoms 270 miles. You know, the argument is none of these reporters who are working at the moment have got symptoms. And they're doing their job that they can't do from home. See, the guidelines are sketchy, aren't they?
Symptoms. But when the gathering...
If you've got symptoms or someone's got symptoms in your house, you have to stay indoors.
Yes.
Because you might spread it. Not on purpose. God, no one's suggesting anyone's evil. But, you know, the responsibility is to the wider community and you keep it within your house.
Yeah, that's obviously. I've already had the virus myself, actually.
Have you?
Yeah. And when I come out of hospital, I stayed indoors for nearly 14 days rather than the 10 days they said. And then I never went near anybody who was vulnerable.
Yeah.
For quite a while after that. But I still can't get it out of my head at how these people are allowed to gather together in a group like that. But they're not just close to each other. They're shouting, and when you shout, you spread droplets for metres and metres all over the place, you know. I mean, it's a very careless thing for them to do.
Mm. There it is. 0344 499 1000. I mean, this is true. This is true. Let's speak to Rena. Hello, Rena.
Oh, good evening. I was just saying to Langley the answer to the phone. Nobody has picked up on the point when Mr. Simmons told government last year...
Mr. Simmons?
What's the gentleman's name?
Cummings.
Oh, I do beg your pardon.
That's all right.
I beg your pardon. that he brought up the subject that he had advised the government over a year ago that we were going to have a virus.
Mm. Yeah, he mentioned that, didn't he, in today's press call?
He did that at his call today. Nobody has since picked up and said to Boris Johnson, when he came on, I believe that you were told over a year ago that this could happen and nothing was done about it.
Mm.
Now, to me, that's bad, if not worse, that the government's been told by somebody who knows about these kind of things and then wasn't listened to.
There were meetings. I mean, he didn't go to the meetings, Boris Johnson, but there were meetings.
Well, there are meetings, but what, other people have not passed the message on to Boris Johnson and say that this gentleman had said over a year ago that there would be a virus and nothing was done. No piling up of equipment, PEP, anything. But now that he's done this with his child, it's the worst thing that's ever walked in 2 feet.
Right. But so what are you saying? That the fact that he tried to alert the government means that what he's done now, or what he may or may not have done now, is less serious? More serious?
No. What I'm saying, maintaining that if the government had listened to him and made some kind of preparation, maybe we wouldn't be in the difficult situation that we're in.
Mm. It was an interesting one. Thanks, Rena. 0344 499 1000. Hello, Steve in Spalding, if you're coming on. I don't know where Steve in Spalding is. Alan Hendricks, will you ring up, please, because I'm not your pen friend. 0344 499 1000. Hello, Steve.
Hi there. How are we doing? All right.
Not too bad, thank you. This is this is a tangled web, isn't it? We don't have to talk about that if you don't want, but it's up to you.
Well, I was just going to change the subject a bit, really, because you're Manchester-based originally, weren't you?
A long time ago, yeah. I was born there, but I moved when I was 10.
Exactly the same as me. Now, I remember a lot of words being used by older generations that are not used anymore.
Right.
And a lot of different, things like, put some gumption into it and that sort of thing, which you don't hear anymore.
Yeah.
And do you remember things like that?
Yeah, I had to write down the word ginnel for the first time, probably in my life, the other day, because my cousin's daughter has become the unofficial patroller of the ginnel. People have been sneaking round through the back way to one of the neighbours to engage in less than socially distant behaviour. And this kid stands at the top of the slide and calls them out. So, yeah, she's been patrolling the ginnel. But, yeah, there are plenty of words that I've heard but never had to write down. Gosh.
You see, my nan used to always say, evidently. And I never heard anybody say that since. It's normally, it's sort of something like, apparently, or something like that now.
Yeah,
but
not funny.
But the word she always was evident, or vexed. Vexed was another one she used to. I'm vexed.
Here's one that my mum had trouble with when we first moved. She was ringing the estate agents for information, as you tend to do once a sale is kind of in progress. And she said, I really don't mean to mither you. And he said, I'm sorry? What now?
Mither.
I don't mean to mither. Yeah, mither was one that was unheard of at this part of the world, yeah.
Yeah, mither, to bother,
to pester, mither.
Pester, that's it, yeah.
My kids know what mither means, because they're always being accused of it. it's a strange one when your kids are posher than you.
Well, it's just the way it goes, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. But anyway, it's just funny how words disappear, isn't it? That's all.
Yeah,
anyway, I'll let you get off.
Definitely.
Thanks for talking to me, and I hope Ian's back and well soon.
Yeah, no, he's fine. He's going to be back next week. He's just having some time out. But thanks very much for that, Steve. Nice to hear from you. 0344 499 1000. Let's take a little break. Then we'll have a little bit of time, I don't know, after the news to talk to you if you want, or I can blather on. 0344 499 1000. You're listening to Talk Radio.
Late Late Night with Kathryn Boyle on Talk Radio.
Yeah, I don't like that kind of referring to people as pigs and being offensive in that way when it's people doing their jobs, because I wouldn't have it the other way around. I wouldn't have. I don't like it when you call politicians names like that, because I don't think it's helpful and I don't think they're all the same. I think we've got a bit too used to standing on different sides and shouting at each other, or the idea that that's what goes on, because I think for the most part in society there are a lot of people who aren't sure and who are watching from the sidelines as kind of political discourse becomes like a football crowd. Our life's not quite as simple as that, is it? And I don't believe there are many truly, truly evil people in the world. I think that there are people with different points of view. And I don't think that anything was ever achieved by assuming that someone who doesn't agree with you is somehow less of a person. I think that's a dangerous way to go. Anyway, that's why I kind of pulled up earlier on when the suggestion was that reporters were behaving like pigs. It did make me wonder, though, that kind of scrum, how safe that was, especially given the current conversation. 0344 499 1000. Here's another thing. Television and the way television has gone. Do you ever get moments, and maybe it's because I'm getting on, but do you ever get moments where you kind of wonder whether whether the people that write the complaint letters about the thin end of the wedge have got a point? The only reason I ask is because of this story in the Daily Star. 15 men compete to impregnate 41-year-old woman in new reality series Labour of Love. A new reality TV series, Labour of Love, sees 15 men compete to impregnate 41-year-old beauty Christy Katzman. The show is hosted by Sex and the City favourite Kristen Davis. It can't be this, can it? It can't be this. Let's read further. Maybe they're just doing this to shock. Maybe there's something, I don't know, scientific going on. It can't just be entertainment and someone throwing her lot for her life and her child's life into a television programme. That can't be right. Labour of Love, a new series on US network Fox, sees 15 men compete to impregnate 41-year-old beauty Christy Katzman. Host Kristen Davis, known for her role in Sex and the City, has explained that the winning man and Christy will skip the dating and go straight to baby making. I mean, what could possibly go wrong? The programme, which kicked off in the US last night, sees the 15 men living in a home together as they take turns dating Christy in hopes of landing the ultimate prize, a baby. Now, this reminds me of that Five Guys in a Week. Did you watch that? Because it was simultaneously the best and the worst television I've ever seen. It was uncomfortable, it was out of order, it was unpleasant, but it was also something I am glad I watched. It was incredible. The parents of each of the men, oh right, they're in on it too, also make their own attempts at selling both Christy and their audience, oh sorry, and the audience on their sons. Christy is a recently divorced woman and has a thriving career. However, she's never had kids and obviously wants to. Talking to Fox in a recent interview, Christy said she was interested in the show because she felt her biological clock was ticking. She commented, "I just turned 40 at the time and I'd just gotten out of a relationship. I was trying to navigate dating, knowing that I still wanted to start a family, and the time was definitely not on my side." I think it's really incredible that a lot of women, a really incredible story that a lot of women will be able to relate to. Well, up to a point. Up to a point. I know people who were not in a relationship that they wanted to bring children into for a long, long time, and then they sort of felt their 40s approaching and thought, well, it may never happen. I don't know anyone who has taken quite this step. The brunette beauty also confessed she was really worried that there wouldn't be men out there who'd be into the show's format. She continued, "One of my biggest fears going in was wondering if there are actually men out there who are ready for this." And I think we really tested them off the bat by putting them through the whole sperm analysis pretty much moments after I met them. It's not the sperm I'm worried about. Many may jump at the chance for multiple dates, but Christy admitted it could be overwhelming at times. I bet. She added, "It might sound like a total dream to date 15 incredible men at once. No, it sounds awful. It's actually super overwhelming. I think it really requires you to stand in your own presence and really know what you want." Labour of Love is airing in the US now. It's unclear whether the show will make it over to UK screens. You know it's going to make it to UK screens, and you know we're going to end up with a UK version of this thing, don't you? Flipping heck. Maybe Mary Whitehouse was right. I mean, the sort of stuff that we're getting now, I mean, I don't mind what grown-ups do. Grown-ups who are in, you know, full possession of their wits and know what they're getting into. That's another question, though, isn't it? Whether people do know what they get into when they get into reality television. You know, it's something that people who are used to television and the games that are played around it struggle with. So for someone to come in from nowhere and all of a sudden be sort of jettisoned into that, there are high-profile examples of it really not working out. But to pin your baby hopes on someone that you meet through a television programme? No, I don't think so. I really don't think so. I really don't think so. Flipping out. So there's that. And I was also going to tell you about, social distancing nudity. They're naked and apart, but they're not alone. Much of artist photographer Spencer Tunick's work features nude bodies in public spaces. This was going to be the whole show. Unable to shoot in person, so to speak, due to the coronavirus pandemic, he created his current exhibition by having 10 people at a time expose their naked forms on group video conferences. That's one way to put it. "I think as photographers and artists working with groups of people, we need to learn how to adapt and not be stifled by limitations during these trying times," Tunick says in a press release. "New ways of connectivity will evolve, creating innovative human connectivity with social distancing in mind." Those words, I think, are supposed to mean something. "The desire to make art communally still burns hot." The series, called Stay Apart Together, has featured participants everywhere from Thailand, South Africa and the US to India.
That. Could you try again?
Who's that?
"You're Catherine. That's what you told me. Anyway."
Oh my God, what's happening? My phone is talking to me for the first time in ages. Daryl?
I love it when that happens.
Siri is rebelling. Siri has not spoken for years.
I love it when that happens, but I love it more when that happens whilst live on the radio. That's one of my favourite
things. Yeah, when I'm talking about nudity, like Siri's used to hearing that from me. Oh, I hear you may need some help. Siri is like the new version of that flipping paperclip. I see you're writing a document. Do you want me to interfere? Siri, shut your face.
I love it. Well, you're talking about nudity again, are you?
God, I can't help myself.
An insight into your life there, Catherine?
I'd wish we'd spoken about nudity all night, to be honest, because we're no further on than we started. People are dissatisfied. People are dissatisfied either because they go with what Cummings said or they don't. But yeah. No one's going to have their mind changed.
Yeah, I have a few things to say about that, as you can imagine, because it's been quite the week today, hasn't it? Yeah, and I think we'll talk about this more after one. We're going to have some room to breathe on it, but it strikes me that there should be a space that we all occupy. You, me, supporters of his, enemies of his, all of us, where we agree that it isn't okay for the government and for officials who work for the government to use the levers of that government to cover their tracks when they have clearly done something wrong, and that might not even be a resignation. It might just be an apology. It might be an asking for forgiveness. But when you dig in with the brazen arrogance that they have dug in today, and you use all those things that you and I hold dear, right? I mean, the levers of democracy, to do that in your own interest, that should scare all of us, not just the people who are against. Everybody should be fearful of that.
Well, I said this earlier on, but I don't know whether I was actually on air because mysteriously I dropped out. Again, do you know what? If I was Tinfoil Hat Brigade, I would read into that. But if this story was coming to us from North Korea or Russia, we'd all be having a laugh about it.
Yeah.
Because it seems outrageous.
Yeah, and we'd be pointing to it as an example of why that state have failed its people. And we'd be using it, we'd be holding it up as an example as to why we live in a glorious democracy. And here we are.
You know, I'm not after... I know no one's... the people that don't believe me are not going to believe me. I am not out to get anybody. But There were so many inconsistencies in that story. It felt insulting to be fed those lines.
Oh, yeah.
Insulting.
You said it perfectly yesterday. I referenced your tweet about your wonderful, heartbreaking tweet about your nighttime light thing.
Standing on the landing and flashing my mum, who's standing on her landing and flashing back every night 8 o'clock.
And you said that you've been a mug, and that's how the nation feels. That's how the nation is bound to feel when one of the architects of the lockdown order that has pushed us all to the absolute limit has flouted it. There's not two ways about it.
Yeah, it's galling. It really is.
It is.
It really is.
Anyway, we'll talk more about that after 1 o'clock.
I bet you will.
Lots to get through.
So nice to hear your voice, Daryl Morris.
And you, Kath.
This
is the Northern Quarter. Is going to get a right. Oh, we had somebody on the show last night from Bolton.
Did
now,
you?
I know. Now this. Incredible. We're going to get marched out.
Talking about declining standards. Listen, it's nice to hear from you. I'll be listening. Enjoy Daryl Morris. He's fantastic. And I shall be back same time tomorrow with you from 10 o'clock. 0344 499 1000 remains the number. Daryl Morris will take your phone calls. You don't have to sit there and simmer if that's what you're doing. Let's have a conversation. You're listening to Talk Radio.
Talk Radio.